Hey everybody, Rob here, setting you up for what you are about to hear in this episode of the podcast, and I'm really excited for you to listen to this free preview of my newest audiobook presentation. I collaborated with the great Taryn Armstrong to bring you a little something that we are calling But First, a Big Brother 2 blockumentary. This is a full rewatch of Big Brother 2, and in this special preview, you are going to hear all about the first week of Big Brother 2. We'll get into the exact reasons why this season was so impactful for me personally and for Taryn in this free preview. But Big Brother 2 was the first of the Big Brother seasons to play in the format that we now know as U.S. Big Brother. And of course, it was historic for a number of reasons. Between the format of the new show, there was also 9/11 during that season, which we will touch on in the final part. But most importantly to us was the gameplay of a Dr. Will Kirby, who to this day, as legend has it, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, Big Brother player of all time. We have a particular focus on Dr. Will and his game throughout all 29 episodes that aired on CBS and even one that was aired on CBS.com as we discuss it all here in this audiobook presentation, which clocks in at about 19 hours and 20 minutes for you. So enjoy part one of the presentation of what Taryn and I did. If you'd like to hear more, you'd like to get the entire audiobook, you can purchase the whole shebang, all 19 hours and 20 minutes of But First, a Big Brother 2 blockumentary at the link robhasawebsite.com/BB2. The entire audiobook costs $5.99. If you're a patron of Rob Has a Podcast, even at the $5 level, we've got a special code for you in your Patreon account for 50% off your purchase. So if you go to robhasawebsite.com/BB2, you can hear the rest of this after, if Taryn and I impress you with the work that you're about to listen to here in this podcast. This whole preview you're about to listen to is about 3 hours long, so you're going to get a real opportunity to tell if this is for you or if it's not. And quickly, a thank you to Ryan Elder, who wrote the theme music that you're about to hear as we get into But First, a Big Brother 2 blockumentary. Hello, everyone, and welcome to But First, a Big Brother 2 blockumentary where we retrospect the unexpected, and I'm very excited to be here with this man, part machine, much like the great Dr. Will. Here is Taryn Armstrong. Taryn, how are you?
Yeah, it's just circuitry and wires, man. I'm so excited to be here. I've always wanted to do this. I've always wanted to talk about these old seasons. I've probably rewatched them about 15 times, which is definitely an exaggeration, but probably close. So very, very happy to be here.
Well, let me just set up what we plan to do here in this project. And I'm very excited to have you on board for this, Taryn, because as many of our listeners know, that Josh Wigler and I went through and did a full 30-season retrospective of Survivor. And a lot of people had asked, okay, when are you going to go through and do the retrospective of Big Brother? And I said, nope. As the great Josh Wigler might say, I would not ever be interested in going through it. It's just, there's so much to chew off. But this idea started to kick around in my head about, well, after Stephen Fishback and I covered season one of The Genius and did a Genius Know-It-Alls audiobook, I had always wanted to go back to Big Brother 2. And I said, what if we just did Big Brother 2? What if we went back and just explored one season? Who knows where it goes from there? It's not a commitment to cover every season or do anything else but Big Brother 2. And that idea just really, really appealed to me because it is such an important season in terms of this franchise, in terms of reality TV, and to me personally, Taryn.
Yeah, I can imagine. I know that like it was such a big inspiration for you going into Survivor and applying for Big Brother and everything. And it was definitely a really important season for me. It was the first season that I watched as a kid, and it made me fall in love with the show.
And so we will talk about all that and much more as we go through this season of Big Brother, because now we all understand the Big Brother game and all of its twists and turns, for better and for worse. But first, Taryn, there was Big Brother 2. Yes. And that's what we will go through episode by episode, week by week, and explore all the different aspects of this show really starting to find its footing after coming out of Big Brother 1, which is a totally different animal. And then we have not one, but two Big Brother winners who are really born out of this in Dr. Will, which we will spend much of our time talking about. And then also we can see a little bit of the formation of Mike Boogie, who will go on to win after coming back in the All-Star season. But this is all just very raw here going into this season.
Yeah, it's weird how that happens, where we've seen it happen in Survivor 2, where there are a couple of people who were in alliances and then both of them turned out to be winners. But you would never have thought, watching this when it aired in 2001, that both Will and Mike Boogie would be winners of Big Brother and legends of the game.
Certainly not after the events of this first week. And that's what we're going to talk about here in part one of this five-part series, where we are going to discuss all of the events of getting into the house all the way through that first eviction night, which takes place in the fourth episode of Big Brother 2. So that's what we're going to discuss here today in part one of this series. But Taryn, I guess we should sort of just back up into Big Brother 2 and how this came to be, because Big Brother 1 was certainly the much more heralded experiment, which was coming to CBS back during the summer of 2000. Now, just for context, do you remember any of these things from the actual airing of them?
From Big Brother 1 or from Big Brother 2?
Well, from both.
What I remember from when I was a kid was watching Dr. Will. There was very little that I remembered apart from Will and Bunky, I guess. I remember the big hairy guy. But I just remembered watching Will in the house. I didn't know anything beyond that. I was just watching it on TV. I wasn't aware of any of the sort of background stuff or what was going into the season at all.
And were your parents fans of these shows?
Yeah, my mom got me into it, basically. She was watching Survivor, she got me into that, and then she started watching this, and I just watched with her, basically.
And just to give my own background in terms of a time and a place, where the first season of Survivor aired during my last year of college, and I did watch a lot of the first Big Brother, but I wasn't necessarily a super fan. I did even check out the live feeds way back when on BigBrother2000.com, and they were free at that point in time, but they were really terrible, and they barely were. And we also had not a great internet connection in the house I lived at when I was in college. But during Big Brother 2, it was going to be a season where I was out of college now. I didn't have a lot going on. I had much better internet. And this was really the show that I was able to sink my teeth into, where it wasn't just once a week like Survivor. I was able to devote a lot of my free time to all of this. And CBS really loved the idea of having a Big Brother way back when. But the problem with Big Brother 1 was it was a good earner, but it was neither really a critical darling and did not have amazing appeal with the fans, Taryn.
Yeah, it was boring, Rob. It was just boring. Nobody liked it. As far as I can tell, like I said, I wasn't watching live at the time, nor was I really capable of understanding what the sort of reception was. But certainly going back and watching it and understanding why they changed things, it just didn't land with anybody. Like, the people who watch reality TV for drama, there wasn't much drama. The people that watch for strategy, there was obviously no strategy. So it just didn't have any sort of appeal to anybody here.
And CBS had this other juggernaut at that time in Survivor, where during the height of Survivor 2, the Australian Outback, you know, over 40 million people a week are tuning in to watch this show. And here you have Big Brother, which is sort of like getting like 7 million and 8 million. And now that's around the ratings that Survivor is getting and winning its time slot and doing very well. But I think that they felt like at the time that there was potential there of, we have this audience of people who really loves this content, but it feels like we have this great opportunity with this thing that is very profitable. How could we try to make that better? And this is when CBS brought in Arnold Shapiro to be the new executive producer. and co-executive producer, an up-and-comer named Allison Grodner.
Oh, yeah. Grodner from season two. And Arnold. Yeah, you know, Arnold, I feel like, was a huge driving force from this point on and really revolutionized the entire show. So this definitely, I mean, and obviously Grodner continues on to this day as the driving force of this show. So definitely a lot of history here.
And Arnold Shapiro, that he's best known for, he was the person who did the documentary Scared Straight, where they brought like kids to a prison. And then they had like these prisoners all like yelling at people. And I do think that there might be some sort of parallels if you really squint between people going to Big Brother and also going to jail. We certainly would have some contestants that would end up in both places. But Arnold Shapiro comes in with this pedigree. And they felt like that he had a lot of great ideas about what could be done with Big Brother. And they ended up abandoning this international format, which was brought in for the first season, and created this game, which we now know has a head of household picking out people and having the house guest vote, as opposed to the previous iteration, Big Brother 1, where the people in the house would nominate people, but then America would vote. And as we saw in Big Brother 1, voted out a lot of the interesting people first, which made for a much less exciting show. And as we see here in this first week of Big Brother 2, that new formula is going to pay dividends very quickly, Taryn.
Oh, yeah. And it's such a beautiful formula. I love the game of Big Brother. It's so complex and interesting. And honestly, I like it even more than Survivor. I think it was an improvement on the format that Survivor created. And I know that's not necessarily the mainstream opinion, but I love it. The fact that any one person can win the head of household and nominate two other people, and it's then between those two people that are going to be evicted, that makes for such interesting gameplay because you have to be aware of everybody in the house. Any one person can be the end of your game, as opposed to in Survivor, where as long as you have the majority, you're probably good. It's so fascinating. And obviously, there were some minor improvements along the way, but the creation of this game in season two, I think, is the reason why the show has continued on for so long and why there's still so many fans for it.
And the person who becomes that head of household, they put those two people up on the block. And while one of them leaves, the other one stays and carries some sort of a grudge potentially forward against that person who put them up on the block. And the drama just keeps getting propelled forward each week after each week. And as we're going to see here in the early going, we know the rules and the best practices and all of these pieces of information that we've picked up over the years. But the beauty of going back and looking at all of this is that none of that is known. You know, you hear people talking about in this first week about, oh, this is the game. Nobody knows what the game is.
Yeah, they're figuring it out as they go along. And it's really fascinating watching them try to understand how this game works. And, you know, they're feeling bad about nominating people. They're thinking about, how can I make it so that this person does this thing and that what I get what I want. It's really interesting to see just like the natural progression of understanding the game.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And that's something that we can highlight as we go through each of these little things that we learn. And a hugely important lesson gets learned here in this first week of Big Brother 2, where it's always thrown around, but pawns go home in this game. And that is something that Mike Boogie is going to learn very quickly here in this very epic first week of Big Brother 2.
It's the primal rule of nature in Big Brother. It's pawns go home.
Yeah. And Taryn and I are going to talk through everything. If you would like to do a rewatch of Big Brother 2, there are a number of different ways that you can do this. I actually have been watching them on CBS All Access, which I have to say has not been a bad experience in terms of going through it. But there's a lot of other places between different copies that might be on YouTube or different places. A rewatch of Big Brother 2 is certainly not mandatory. We are going to explain things, and it might be much more of a time saver just to listen to us than to do a rewatch. I'm sure a rewatch will only make listening to this more fun, if that's humanly possible, Taryn.
I don't think it's humanly possible. I think this is the most fun anyone can ever have in their entire life.
Okay. Well, let's, I want to get into a little bit about why this project spoke to me so personally to go through it, because I'm sure that anybody who's listened to the podcast, you know, knows what a big Survivor fan I was from way back when. But I loved Survivor and it was such an important show to me, but I never, ever envisioned myself being on Survivor. You know, maybe in the first season, I was like, oh, that would be fun. But the next couple of seasons of Survivor were so hard in terms of the elements that I just never thought I could physically do Survivor. And really, coming out of Survivor Australia and certainly going into Survivor Africa, I just thought that this was way too intense, not something that I would really like to do. You know, on paper, sure, I sort of thought like it would be fun to be on Survivor, but it was not something that super appealed to me. But this Big Brother 2 came along and this changed everything for me. And specifically, watching Dr. Will play this game really did change, because there hadn't been anybody I had seen. And again, at the time that this is airing, this comes on in early July of 2001. We had seen the second season of Survivor in the Australian Outback, but I never saw a contestant that I could really relate to in any way. Maybe like a Greg in the first season, but he was so wacky and there really wasn't anybody that I saw as being similar to myself, other than Colby, I guess, in the Australian Outback. And
but, of course.
But Dr. Will, really, the way that he carried himself and ultimately the way that he would play his game, he was just having so much fun. And to me as a viewer, it really just changed the way I thought about the contestants going on these games. That he seemed to be, to me, the first person who was sort of aware that there was an audience. And what he did so well was that he often would be communicating with us at home, not just to the person that he was talking to in the diary room. It did seem as though, like, he will say in different things where he'll sort of like wink to the camera and raise an eyebrow. And especially then when I started watching the live feeds, he would do a lot of talking to the camera. And I really felt like that I could relate to him. And in terms of how much fun he was having, it was such a thrill to watch.
That's really interesting to me, because when I saw you on Survivor, you definitely, I think I saw the seeds of that in your game and how you carried yourself and the way that you kind of would wink to the camera, or the way that you composed yourself in your confessionals. I definitely got the sense that, not at the time, but I get the sense now that that was definitely something that was at the very least, or that was inspired by him, or at the very least was something that you found that you had in common with him when you watched it yourself. And interesting enough, I think you were the first person that I felt like I related to on Survivor, because before then it was something that I'd always seen Survivor as this adventure show. It was less about strategy when I was watching it as a kid, and it was more about like the fact that they're out on an island and they're surviving, and that's crazy. And they also happen to be voting each other out, and they do have some alliances and stuff, but that was kind of secondary to me at the time. And I just kind of liked the personalities and stuff. And I liked Ethan a lot, for sure. He was somebody that I kind of related to because I played soccer at the time. But you were the first person for me on Survivor that really brought the strategy edge to it, and really, you know, made my appreciation for Survivor match the appreciation I had for Big Brother that I had from season two when I watched Dr. Will, because watching Dr. Will was the first time I saw the strategy aspect. And that's the thing that I really fell in love with.
Yeah, the strategy is really important, but I feel like that part is going to come later with Dr. Will. That there's a lot of talk early on about how smart he is, and is he sort of running a cult there? Is he being manipulative? And I think that there's he's talked about in almost negative terms, where we're going to see his gameplay really get turned on at the point where he's left all alone. But to me, the thing that he just had this charisma that he was able to really connect with the audience, and really, it was Dr. Will and Boston Rob. Those were my major two influences in terms of how they carried themselves, not so much in the game from a strategy point of view, but in their confessional. They both just had this unique quality where they were talking to the audience and it just connected in such a powerful way that I had said, like, oh, okay, you can go and do this. And this seems like the, you know, the way that I would want to carry myself. This seems like the most fun way to play the game where you're telling the people at home what you're actually thinking. And it just, it was changed everything in my mind. So if people who are listening to this, you know, think that there was any sort of thing that I did that influenced anything that came after me in Survivor, there's a through line that goes back to what we're about to talk about here in Big Brother 2. So if you want to follow that family tree in terms of like any sort of idea that I incepted into Survivor, if you subscribe to those theories, and I'm sure there are some who do not, but if you do, then you could trace that all back to what we're going to talk about over these 10 weeks of Big Brother 2.
For me, when I watched Dr. Will as a kid, it was something that I was not the happiest kid. I was not the most social kid. I was kind of awkward. I was very shy. And watching Will, who is someone who's so comfortable and so confident and so charming, be able to speak to the audience and speak to me and make me feel like I can relate to somebody like him, who just seemed like so far out of the realm of anything that I could ever be. That's the thing that really made me fall in love with the game. And watching him then manipulate the people and work the strategy and have some amount of like control and power was just like, I don't know, it really fascinated me. And I really love that aspect of what he brought to the show and what then pushed forward to inspire other people to play the game the way that it's meant to be played, I think. And I think that you carried that torch. And I think that there are other people that carried that torch. And I think that's the reason why the show continues to be successful. And that's the reason why there's still such a passionate fan base that keeps the show going.
And I don't want to only talk about Dr. Will here. That's not ultimately what we want to do. There are a lot of other important characters in this. And also, I do think that Mike Boogie deserves a lot of credit here, because I think that sort of the thinking going into Big Brother is, or Big Brother 2 specifically, is that Big Brother is a show that's boring. And you had people come in, specifically Mike Boogie, who I really look at as the ringleader of all of this, who tried to create this party atmosphere in the house. And I think this really is going to come back and backfire on him specifically very badly by the end of this first week. But I know, as somebody who was a 22-year-old person watching this, I was so excited about this new direction of this show of, okay, there are these people in the house that are having these crazy parties and there's a lot of drinking going on. And so that was definitely a hook for me and my close friends that we're going to start watching this show about, hey, there are these people in here that are really fun. And then there are these other people that are going to be trying to kick them out because of this. And it's definitely some bad behavior that's going to be going on here. And we're going to call all of that out. But just in terms of something that was trying to change the narrative from, this is a show that's boring, nothing happens on this show, I think that that perception is going to be shattered immediately. And I do think that the show tries to really play that up in these. I mean, there's a lot of risque things that they're showing in these first couple of episodes.
Oh, yeah. And I think that was part of the strategy of changing the show's image, along with this, the new strategy aspect, was these are crazy people. They're controversial. They're rowdy. They're enthusiastic. They're big characters, as opposed to, you know, what you saw previously, which was a bit more laid back, a bit more boring. This is going to be party town. We have people, we have the, you know, the homophobic guy with the gay guy. We have the party guy and the married people. They really wanted to play up those interactions and those conflicts. And I know going back, I was looking at some articles that were written at the time about the show. And this was something that was, I think, controversial. People thought like, oh yeah, they've already ruined the integrity of this show. They brought in these low lives. And I like, who are just wanting to party and you know, play spin the bottle and all that nonsense, the risque business. And I can certainly see why people would think that's controversial, but I think it definitely added to the success of this season.
Yeah. And the show is going to definitely take on a bit of a bad reputation, certainly from some critics, especially when we get to the point after the Justin incident is going to happen, which we'll talk about here in this first part, because that's going to start to manifest itself by that first eviction show. So again, lots of stuff to cover here. Taryn, one of the other things I'm really looking forward to talking with you about is that you've been very vocal over the years about your undying support for Dan Gysling, and the question that's always kicked around between Big Brother fans, sort of in, let's leave Derek out of this for the moment, Dan versus Will. You've always come down 100% in support of Dan, and I don't want to say or put words in your mouth unless you think this, that you have been saying Will might be overrated. Is that how you look at Will?
I definitely think there are some people that overrate Will's ability. I think that there's a lot of nostalgia when looking at his previous games. There's a lot of just regular bias in terms of Will is more fun to watch. He's more likable. So when looking at his game, it's a lot easier to say, well, he's incredible. This mistake was not a mistake because it worked out. Stuff like that. So I wouldn't say that he's necessarily overrated in the sense that I do think that he is right up there with Dan. I think it's very, very close. I just think that Dan edges him out on a lot of different aspects. But I mean, we're talking about like such little amount of information, and the ability to really rank these players is so limited that if we saw them play a third time, we'd probably know a lot more, and it could easily be Will that's better than Dan. But given the information we have, I do think Dan is better, but I still think Will is an incredible player, and I think he has amazing instincts, and his charisma, I think, makes up for a lot of the failures in his strategic game.
And no disrespect to Dan, I've always come down as that I think that Will is the best Big Brother player to ever play the game. But Taryn, unlike you, I've never rewatched a season of Big Brother, and I've never gone back and looked at any of these episodes from Big Brother 2 since I was a 22-year-old person watching it back in the summer of 2001. So I'm actually really looking forward to being able to make my own distinction, and whether I may come down on it on your side and say, you know what, that the legend of Will is so much better than what the actual genuine article could be, or maybe I come down and say, no, actually, this was just as good as I remember it, and actually compared to what comes after, maybe even better than I could have even thought from before.
We'll just have to find out.
Yeah, but I'm very excited to really be able to nail that down, because definitely Dr. Will is going to find himself in a lot of hot water by the end of this first week of the show. But I don't know how much I can necessarily fault mistakes that get made here when we don't know what the rules of the game are. I don't know. How do you factor that sort of like, oh, if somebody does something that we now know to be a tactical error in the game, but did it before it was established as a tactical error, Taryn, do we have to just say, no, that was bad instincts, or we can't really fault them for it?
We definitely have to look at what the instincts are in terms of when you look at somebody like Nicole, who ostracized herself immediately. Obviously, that's not good, and that's probably going to happen anytime she starts any season. But when you look at somebody like Will, who I do think would have done his research and would have made sure that he understood the game going in, I think that some of these mistakes Will made early on probably wouldn't have made if he had known more about the game and understood more and been able to see some examples of other people playing it. So I do think there's some leeway we have to give him and some of the other players in terms of their mistakes and the fact that they made them when nobody knew what they were doing.
Okay. Taryn, let's talk through a little bit of this cast that's going to play in Big Brother 2. Now, it's interesting, we have only 12 people, so we have a chance to really get to know a lot of these cast members much more than we would in the modern day, 16, 17 person seasons.
Yeah, I wish we would go back to, I'm probably going to be saying this a lot, during this season, because there's a lot of things I really love about the format of the season and how they structure it. But I think a smaller cast really works well. We get to know people a lot better, even in just the show version. And even Cheryl, who's the person we get to know the least, I feel like I know a lot more about Cheryl than I do like half of the people on Big Brother 18. So I really enjoy the smaller cast and more focus on understanding who these people are.
And just stylistically, the show does not feel like modern day Big Brother at all. And I don't want to necessarily knock modern day Big Brother. That's right. I don't want to do this and say like, oh, this was awesome and it sucks now, because I don't think I necessarily feel that way. It is much slower paced. So, you know, we talk about, you know, it's just weird how there's often no music in scenes. To me, this feels like at times it's kind of like an episode of The Office, where we're just like seeing like long scenes played out, and then we're cutting to different people sort of weighing in from the diary room. It is a lot less slick than modern day Big Brother.
Definitely. And there are, I think, benefits and negatives to that, because it really puts you in the moment. Because when, like, even just coming when the cast comes out onto the in front of the house for the first time, we see them walk out awkwardly and it's quiet and they're kind of looking at each other, and you feel like you're there in that moment. You're watching these people. There's not a bunch of music playing. There's not sweeping camera movements. It really feels like you understand, and it really allows you to put yourself in their shoes and understand what they're going through. The same thing happens throughout the show, even when they're in the house. At the same time, though, it is very slow. And once you get the gist of it, you're just kind of like, oh, can we move on now?
Yeah, there were some segments that, you know, I was like, okay, well, let me check Twitter, what's going on here. Overall, like, it was very fun to go back through and to watch. So we first meet this cast, and actually, this is one thing that's kind of been unchanged through however many seasons of Big Brother that we've seen, maybe more at the time that you're listening to this. So the intro of people just getting their keys at their house, Taryn, I mean, that was the one thing that when we watched Big Brother 19, it was pretty identical.
Yeah, it really is. It's amazing how, it does feel very dated nowadays, but it's something that they've kept, and, you know, good for them, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. But nowadays we sort of like break it up into like four. We sort of just like got everybody in one big montage. So let's just talk through the cast a little bit quickly, and we'll go in the order that they go out of the game. The first person that we're going to lose, somewhat unexpectedly, is Justin Seaback. And he certainly was an interesting figure in Big Brother history, Taryn.
A very interesting figure. And I think his introduction was probably the best of any of them. He said, I'm Justin. I'm Justin Credible. And just in case you didn't know, now you do. And he's also got some nice underwears for the ladies.
Got some nice underwears for the ladies. Yeah. This guy... he was a Jersey Shore guy, really, in the first of his, you know, archetype of, you know, the first of any Jersey Shore type people that we get to see, that he's the first house guest from New Jersey, appropriately, in the canon of reality TV. And he is this jacked guy who is just depicted only as like a meathead and a thug. He is sort of like, befriends Will and Boogie and Shannon, and he's really part of their crew until his untimely demise from the house.
Yeah, and I mean, just the look of him is so different to what we see in Big Brother casting nowadays. We often see the jock kind of stereotype, but they much more often look like Hardy, where they're kind of like a pretty boy jock. We don't really get Justin types anymore, and I don't think we ever really got them after we caught Justin, probably because they were afraid of repeating their mistakes with Justin.
Right. This is Ronnie from the Jersey Shore's older brother.
Yeah, he's got you know, crooked teeth. He's constantly just talking about like knocking people out and how you know he's gonna punch somebody, he's gonna do whatever. I mean, it's amazing that he made it through the psyche valve.
Yeah, the only things he's ever talking about are things he's effing or things he's punching.
Yes, and often both at the same time.
Yes, that's come up. And I can't wait to talk about his super awkward interview with Julie Chen.
Oh my God.
In that first eviction show. All right, so Justin, we barely got to know you, but more on Justin to come. Now, we have Cheryl that you mentioned. We get to know her very well. She is really painted to be a huge front runner to win the whole game here in this first week. She ultimately goes up on the block, and the thinking being, well, no one will vote out Cheryl, but then there she is to go and be the first evicted house guest from this current version of the Big Brother game.
Yes, she says she's an experience you'll never forget, and nobody ever forgets Cheryl in the history of Big Brother, I'm sure.
Yeah, she really does a amazing job here in this first week, just as a character and being likable. We can get into maybe some flaws in her quote unquote game, which, you know, again, I don't know how much I can fault her. She's playing a game that she doesn't know what the rules are yet in terms of how she should campaign in the situation. But we can certainly get into if there's any sort of faults we can find with the way that she tried to lobby people. It seems like maybe not nearly as much campaign as Nicole was doing in this first week. Another interesting note about Cheryl, where there's some fortuitous circumstances that she does become the first person to get kicked out of the game. But during the time she's out of the house, she actually discovers that she has breast cancer during that time. And so there is an upside to her being out of the house and being able to, you know, get appropriate medical attention during that time that she's out of the game.
Fortunate that it worked out that way, I guess. Who knows what would have happened if she was still in the house, but certainly a hard thing to go through.
A hard thing to go through, but just like, you know, it's just a lot of these things. And I talk about this with Josh and the evolution strategy about that first season. Like, there's just a lot of things that are just like, wow, I can't believe that it did like work out this way, where you have this person that probably could have gone the distance, but somehow during these incredible circumstances, they end up going out, but then they discover something that is they're able to potentially maybe save their life by getting medical care when they, you know, they wouldn't. And again, I'm talking about things that I know very little about. So I apologize if I'm getting anything scientifically incorrect here. But, you know, just, you know, that's really an amazing story. And then just the whole like journey of Will and Nicole from this first week, that somehow that these two end up, it's just, you know, the stuff of legends that it all works out this way.
Yeah, right from the beginning, she is calling him out as somebody that she cannot stand, and he is calling her out as somebody that he cannot stand. And it's just, it's wonderful to watch, knowing the relationship that continues throughout the entire game.
Yeah. The next person who goes out after Cheryl is going to be Autumn. I find Autumn to be a sympathetic figure in this season, in that she really has no business being here, that, you know, she's just like outmatched on every single front by a lot of these different players in the game. And I feel bad for her because, you know, really she just has not a great run.
Yeah, right from the get-go, she's got people calling her needy, and she's like a child, and nobody really respects her, and she never really gets anywhere in the game in terms of anything, really. And she was the person that came on. She's a single mother. She was probably one of the more sympathetic figures, but just Big Brother chews you up and spits you out here.
Yeah, you know, her whole arc is kind of a sob story of then. And she's also like desperately trying to throw herself at various different guys in the house. It's just not a fun story. The saga of Autumn. We'll get into all of it. All right. Now, here is Shannon, best known as the love interest of Dr. Will. She's going to find herself into some controversy as well during Toothbrush Gate, which we'll explore in our next part. But here is Shannon. Taryn, are you a Shannon fan?
No, I wouldn't say I am. I think she's certainly, like, going back watching these episodes, she's definitely somebody that brings a lot to the show in terms of entertainment. Am I a Shannon fan in terms of who she is or what she portrays? Not necessarily. I think she's kind of obnoxious in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
I thought it was actually very astute of her that she told her family as she was leaving that they may not be proud of what she does in the house. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe that's not true, but maybe it was also maybe a little bit true. So yeah, I mean, Shannon, I like the enthusiasm she brought to the game. I like that she was like so willing to play hard with Will, but definitely not a very good player of the game.
No, definitely not. She doesn't come off super nice. We do spend a lot of time on the Will and Shannon romance, but other than Dr. Will, we really don't see her interacting with very many people in a positive way in this game.
Yeah, I was about to say, but basically any interaction she has with anybody outside of Chilltown is a screaming match.
Not great.
Or involving toothbrushes.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Mike Boogie. And I do think that he gets overshadowed by Dr. Will here a lot. And I'm sure we'll spend much more time talking about Dr. Will just by the nature that he stays in so much longer. But Mike Boogie, I think, is a really important character to the franchise. And not just because he comes back and wins and is a three-time player of this game, but I think that he does a lot in setting the tone. He's also the first HOH. He's talking a lot about the game early on, and he does really create this party atmosphere in the house that the show longs for still to this day.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think Mike was not necessarily the most game savvy person in the house, but he was the most TV savvy person. He went in there knowing exactly what they wanted from him in terms of entertainment and what they wanted for him from him for the show. And he brought exactly that, talking about, you know, I feel really bad about my nominations, but this is the game we signed up for, and this is what we have to do, and giving them sound bites and giving them segments on the show, you know, coming up with nicknames for people and you know, just coming up with crazy things to do. And as you mentioned, the party atmosphere, I think Mike, more than anyone, almost in the entirety of Big Brother, knows exactly how to be entertaining for TV. And I think he helped Will understand that too. And Will obviously picked up on it very quickly and understood very well as well how to be entertaining and how to make the show fun. And I really think that Mike was really essential in that.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point between the impression that he leaves on Will, that I think that you might be able to argue, you know, Boogie could be the most influential house guest out of anybody between the impressions that he makes on Will and the mark he makes here in season two, and then ultimately again in the All-Stars, and even, you know, the impression that he makes on people like Ian and Frank and others in Big Brother 14, that I feel like a lot of the things that he contributes to the game in various different ways, again, between things in the diary room and things that he's talking about with nicknames and sort of that party atmosphere, I think is still felt. And I think that without him, I think that this franchise is in a very different direction. Because I do think that you have a lot of people in this game that you could potentially, if you really imagine, could be Big Brother One house guests, like a Kent. You could imagine him in there, or a Cheryl, and you know, even like a Monica or Hardy. Those people, I think, would have been maybe at home in Big Brother One, but Boogie certainly is a game changer in that respect.
Absolutely. And he loves chilling with the ladies. So
he does.
Yeah.
A lot of rapping going on from Mike Boogie here. Yes. In Big Brother Two. I'm glad he drops that by the All-Stars.
Yeah. You know, if I'm going to fault him one thing in terms of entertainment, it's maybe the rapping was just a little bit of a miss.
Yeah. Nicole calls him Slim Shady at one point here in this first week. And I think, I mean, if the shoe fits there with that, maybe, you know, not Mike Boogie's rap career never took off.
I mean, we can't fault him too much if it's what won him the HOH competition, but still.
Yeah, well, maybe, you know, he shouldn't have been that first HOH also.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. All right. Kent is here. Kent is going to be a big figure in this season. I mean, there's a lot in this first week about the relationship between him and Bunky. I'm sure that the producers absolutely loved all of that. Again, there's like a Richard Hatch and Rudy type relationship that happens between the two of them. We'll probably talk about that more when we get to Bunky, but Kent is a huge figure early on.
Yeah, he says he's opinionated, and if you want him to, he'd be happy to get on your nerves. And he talks very early about, you know, freaks and weirdos and how he's going to make fun of them in the house. And he sets himself apart from the rest of these essentially losers that are going to be cast on the show. And I think Kent is one of the most fascinating figures, not necessarily in a good way, when looking back at this season, because seeing his opinions, basically, that are so far removed from how, like, any, so far removed from anything that we would consider acceptable in today's society. It's fascinating that he really feels, not only that he feels justified in that, but he feels that America is on his side with that.
Yeah.
And he feels like he is representative of everyday America, and it's these freaks and weirdos that he's with that are just here for TV that are the weird people.
There's a lot of things that we're going to see from when we go back and watch these things from 2000, 2001 that are going to be jarring. Certainly Kent's views are right up there, and hard to fault him too much, though, when he so quickly comes around on Bunky. And I think that there is a great trajectory for this story. So we don't need to come down too hard on Kent, I don't think, because Bunky ultimately ends up becoming his best friend in the house. And I think it was, again, a great lesson for everybody to see how this plays out and how Kent, when he's exposed to Bunky, when he's like, oh, okay, well, I thought this person was a deviant.
Yeah, and I'm really, really happy that it played out this way. And I think it's like the Richard Hatch and Rudy story. I think it was very important in terms of what it did for, certainly Big Brother is no vehicle for social change, but it definitely helps the conversation, I think, that it was a positive story in that conversation. And I'm so glad it because it could have turned out so much worse if Kent wasn't accepting of Bunky. The fact that he was accepting and the fact that they became friends, I think, is a really great thing to see.
Yeah. And I don't want to do the whole conversation about all of that before we get to where it comes up in the episode, but it's definitely an interesting topic. Okay. Krista is somebody that I have a hard time sort of like wrapping my head around them as a character.
Yeah. It's definitely weird. She's just so hard to read. I never got a good read on her, so I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, she sort of like has a sweet side of her that's, you know, sometimes Southern Belle, but then she also gets like really angry about stuff sometimes. She's kind of with, you know, Will and Boogie, but then she also talks about how she hates Will also with the other people. So I guess we could say best case scenario, she's playing both sides of the house.
Yeah, I think that was definitely the case, especially early on.
Yeah. She's got a marriage proposal coming her way by the end of the season from Mike Boogie.
Yes, despite the fact that she is making out with Justin during his expulsion.
Yes, and we can also talk about her views on the whole Justin situation.
Yeah.
So, all right, so maybe we were going to like give Mike Boogie a do-over. Maybe number one, go the marriage proposal to Krista, and then two is the rapping.
Yeah. I think that's right. But still, I think that Boogie's marriage proposal comes from his understanding of how to make good TV. And I really think that was a TV moment for him.
He's talked about that with me on the podcast about how he was somebody who definitely went on Big Brother to get famous. It was, he was already out here in LA. You know, he's trying to promote his bar. He's trying to become an actor. You know, he talked about his history. He was actually, Jonathan Penner's personal assistant at one point in his career. And Jonathan Penner says he was a terrible assistant. Which, yeah, I could see that. I get it.
Mike Boogie is a storyteller. He's not an assistant.
Right. And so I'm sure he was just something he was doing to pay the bills while he was trying to work on some other hustle that he had going on. And he's a hardworking guy. And we're going to see, you know, he's going to try to play all the angles and try to milk everything out of being on Big Brother 2. All right. Bunky. So much Bunky talk and really a very compelling story going on, especially here in the first week in terms of Bunky hiding the fact that he is a gay person, that he has a significant other at home, which he sort of just is trying to play off. He's not going to lie and tell people he's straight, but he also doesn't want to tell people that he's gay. And again, there's some awkward moments where, Kent is confiding in him about how he doesn't like gay people.
Yeah.
So it really is super awkward, but it does end up going to a better place by the end of this first week.
Yeah, and what a compelling story and what a compelling character Bunky is, especially in the beginning here, where you basically experience or get to at least witness what it's like for him to be in this new environment with all of these new people and be scared to talk about who he is and feel like he's hiding something. And then when he does reveal things, people feel like he's been lying to them, and all of the different complications that come from that. I think this was a really fascinating thing to watch so many years after the fact.
Yeah, I thought that that held up especially well. And just when we're talking about the slower pace, the lack of sound effects and music, I felt like that all just came off super real and was really still captivating all these years later. And even probably more impactful, I thought, than I would have remembered it was.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, this arc that we're talking about right now, up to Cheryl's eviction, it is probably the most compelling thing in these four episodes.
All right, let's talk about Hardy. Taryn, I never really quite got Hardy as a character either.
Hardy is definitely an interesting one because he came when this jock character, which is usually, nowadays at least, is the kind of pretty dumb boy who was into sports, but Hardy was much more of a, I think, sympathetic character, but Will kind of flips that around eventually on him, which I think is interesting. But he's definitely more well-spoken and seems very intelligent and compassionate in a lot of different ways, or at least that's how he tries very hard to portray himself as. And I think we see a couple of these kinds of maybe not a couple, but I think we see it again with Roddy in the next season, where you would think the Roddy stereotype is somebody who is not necessarily who Roddy is. So it's definitely an interesting thing because Hardy walks the line between like dream boy fantasy dude who is really intelligent and kind and also maybe a little too vain and into himself.
Right. That he is a bit of like a Captain America type figure where he, I feel like, always wants to be the good guy. I feel like he really gets on his high horse about a lot of things going on in the house. And I always just looked at him as just like so bland as a personality. Like I don't really, other than sort of being vain, I feel like that they don't really explore too many things in his personality.
Yeah. And I think part of that is that Hardy strikes me as somebody that's more aware of most of the other people in the house of how he's being portrayed and what he needs to do to portray himself in the way that he wants to be portrayed, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about Monica, another very fun personality here in this first season. Taryn, not really a lot going on. Probably one of the more under-edited characters in this first week. Maybe a little bit of purple Monica going through these first four episodes.
Yeah, and honestly, I think she was under-edited for most of the season. I never got a great sense of who Monica was, at least until the very end, when I think that's when we really start to get to know who she is and what she's doing. Mm-hmm. But definitely in these first few episodes, she's basically non-existent. I don't even know why she votes the way that she does.
Yeah, they don't really explain. I don't know what they were necessarily thinking. I was trying to figure out how, like, what votes they thought they had. And Monica ultimately does vote to evict Nicole. She is that third and final vote for Nicole. But they don't really show her as being tight with Chilltown. So I don't know. Maybe she had some sort of a beef with Nicole or some other reason, which was unexplored. So that we don't know. But we'll have fun moments with her. Okay, let's talk about the big two. You know, this is just as much the story of Nicole this season as it is of Dr. Will. Would you say, is that a fair statement to say, Taryn?
That is absolutely fair. This season is the yin to the yang with this season is Will and Nicole as a force of nature. The two of them together, they combine and they create this crazy explosion of insanity, essentially. And it is definitely the tale of both of them.
And I'm sure it must have been difficult for her as a person to have gone through all of this and then to come out and find that the public is almost universally sympathetic to her tormentor.
Yes. And which is and that's the brilliance of Dr. Will, right? Because
yeah.
Because it totally flips, because I know that the fan base was not on his side initially, but he's able to win them over. And I think that's what wins him the game more than anything, is the fact that he is able to flip everything around on Nicole and Hardy. And she really went through a lot over the course of the season. She was not somebody who fit in with the rest of the people in the house very well. And she really had to work very hard to get to where she was. And then when she finally gets all the way to the end, they say, I'm sorry, it just wasn't enough. We still don't like you.
Yeah. And she's somebody who might not have been the most stable person coming into this house, but she really gets a lot of crap thrown at her during this season. A lot of mind games from Dr. Will. There are banners that are messing with her and all sorts. Like, it's just a really, really bumpy 10 weeks for Nicole. So I hope to, be sympathetic to her as long as we go through this and not just take too much glee in her just being antagonized for, 70 days.
It is a little hard to not take glee in it, to be honest. It's so fun to watch Will do it. I don't know.
Okay, well, let's talk about Dr. Will just a little bit more. Of course, he comes into this. I don't know necessarily what he was expecting or hoping to get out of this, but here he is and ready to go and talking about his aspirations to manipulate almost from the jump.
Yeah, the first thing we hear him say is, every day I walk a fine line between confidence and being cocky. And I think that's a large part of Will in a nutshell. He comes into this season wanting to be somebody that just takes control and manipulates everybody. He wants to be the puppet master. And that is the most fun thing to watch, especially from somebody like Dr. Will.
Yeah, and we definitely see him sort of like feeling his way through these first four episodes. I'm very much looking forward to this whole journey throughout his game, and I'm sure we will discuss him at great, great lengths as we go through all of this. So, Taryn, let's start to shift into then people moving into the house. Again, this is something that does not change very much over the history of Big Brother. We send people into the house in groups of four to go and find a bed. Really nothing super exciting going on about the house. It's the same exact house that was used in Big Brother 1. That's sort of noticeable. Like, I had watched the Big Brother 1 premiere for a podcast I did with Eric Stein two summers ago.
Whoa, and that's wild.
Yeah, it is wild. And I had gone through and it's like very quickly like, oh, okay, this is the same house. And it does feel a lot more confined than the Big Brother house as we know it now.
Definitely. And there are considerably less cameras in the house. There's basically no real open spaces except for the backyard and maybe the kitchen. So yeah, it definitely feels very claustrophobic, especially the HOH room, which is just so small. Like, there's no good angle to show the people in the HOH room. It's very interesting.
Like an overhead shot. That's all they have.
Exactly.
Well, the HOH room is a new addition to the house where they didn't have that in Big Brother 1, and then they add that on for Big Brother 2. And again, not a lot of room to do an add-on to the house. I also think that the hot tub wasn't there in Big Brother 1. I think that's also a new addition for Big Brother 2. Again, I think we're trying to do a lot to sort of like cultivate this party atmosphere. So hot tub is going to be an addition there and still a mainstay in the Big Brother house. Okay, so everybody is going to load in. I guess we have a water bed in the house, which I think that did not continue on into future seasons.
Yeah, they're talking about water beds. There's the version of have-nots they have is there's like an army cot or two that somebody has to sleep on.
And the way that the house is set up, that there's basically like three bedrooms, that there is two main bedrooms that sort of have like a piece of like plexiglass in between so you could see into the other bedroom. And then there's another room which is really cramped and has like four beds in it.
Yeah, and yeah, it's hard for me to even imagine the structure, because I mean, at this point, I know the modern house like I've lived there before. But it's hard for me to understand the layout of this old house and where those bedrooms are in relation to the living room and the kitchen and everything like that. But I think we see a lot happen in that bedroom that is sort of next to the front door where there's a closed door. And then there's that open space, the open two bedrooms with the windows in between them. There's usually less happening there as far as I can remember.
Okay. Have you looked for a blueprint of the house, or is this only the? I think this might be only the old, the new house as a blueprint. I'm not sure if they have one for the older Big Brother house.
Yeah, I never looked for one.
Okay, so maybe we can get our hands on that information to figure some stuff out. All right. So yeah, Kent is not happy. He's going to get the sleeping bag, and he kind of like wants to be a martyr about it.
Oh yeah, I think he went into that because basically he goes into that room that with the closed doors. And like, I think he knows that that's already full. He just wanted to go in there and be like, oh, there's no beds in here. And they're like, oh, no, you can we can figure something out. He's like, no, don't worry about it. I'll go sleep in the sleeping bag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do also like that Shannon is in the diary room, probably by the prompting of production, say like, you know, I'm in real estate and I've seen $1 million homes that aren't as nice as
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
Like, really?
That was ridiculous. Like, really? That she's, oh, not only did she said, checking out the pad, it was sweet. I've seen $1 million homes that don't look this good. Like, the lingo, too, just kills me.
Yeah. So, the you know, four
so
signs
sweet, this pad.
In the diary room might be a thing to come here on Big Brother.
Yeah, that might be something that happens a bit more in the future.
Yes, this might be a trademark of the new era of Big Brother. All right, so this is where Nicole starts to get herself into some trouble. That once everybody has loaded into the house, she calls everybody together for the house meeting, which also has gone on to sort of become a bit of a Big Brother tradition. Do you feel like, was Nicole prompted to do this, do you think, by production? Or Nicole did this, they liked how it played out, Taryn, and then they just tell the house guests every season, here's a bottle of champagne, why don't you do introductions in this way?
I think they probably wanted it to happen, but based on the diary rooms, at least, it seemed as though people were saying Nicole just took charge. Shannon said Nicole was lying, hear her roar. She was just like, all right, guys, let's gather together. Let's introduce ourselves. I don't think production told her to do that, but I'm sure they wanted some sort of introduction segment.
Yeah, maybe production was like, all right, why don't you guys sit down with the champagne and introduce yourself? And Nicole took it upon herself to sort of be the moderator of that discussion. And she's very loud. You hear some people sort of like not loving what Nicole has to say. She can be a bit raunchy. Kent, in particular, gets sort of turned off by Nicole in this moment. Although, ironically, he does like a complete 180 on her by the end of the week and thinks that she's one of the real people and the Boogie and Will side of the house are raunchy.
Yeah, she's a real person, Rob.
Yeah. Okay, so we find out some interesting pieces of information about people. Nicole got married only but 2 months ago at Graceland.
Yeah. I mean, good for her.
Rocky honeymoon. Yeah.
I mean, I think the fact that it was so recent really informs a lot of how she feels about her husband and that relationship and some of the things that go down in the house.
Yes. So Bunky also is telling us about how he has this desire to hide the fact that he is a gay person. He, you know, everybody's talking about like your wife. And he says, well, you know, I don't think having a wife named Greg is going to fly.
Yeah,
he tells us. So he, for the first few days, does a very noble job of trying to keep the secret. He doesn't know how the house is going to react. We'll see him start to have like one-on-one conversations with people moving forward. And anything else that was sort of like an interesting note that comes out of this for you, Taryn?
Well, right away we get Will talking about how hot Cheryl is.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, I hope her 17-year-old son isn't watching, because that's gonna be embarrassing for him.
Yeah. Will's crush on Cheryl is a little weird.
It's literally, I think the only thing Will ever says about Cheryl is she's really, really hot. And everyone likes her, and there's definitely no chance she'll ever go home. She's also really, really hot, and I really think she's really hot. She's an amazing body, like in the 99th percentile for her age. She's so hot. It's all they can talk about with Cheryl.
Yeah, you don't even hear Will talk about Shannon in the terms that he talks about Cheryl.
Definitely not. I mean, he says to Shannon that she's very attractive, but like nowhere near the level that he talks about Cheryl.
Like even in the diary room, like he's always like kind of coy about his relationship with Shannon. But Cheryl, he's like, oh yeah, I would totally go after Cheryl.
Yeah, yeah,
Yeah. And the Justin introduction from Bayonne, New Jersey is pretty great. It's just every time he's on the screen, I just am besides myself. I can't believe this person is in the house.
Yeah. I mean, it's so jarring. He's so different than anything we ever see on Big Brother. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And also, Krista had this interesting thing. She's talking about her daughter's name is Lakin, and Nicole is having a hard time saying Lakin.
Yeah. Lincoln? Yeah. Lincoln?
it's like Lake and then in. And I was just like, man, I really sympathize with this because nobody ever says Taryn Red. Just like these cruel mothers giving us weird names that are hard to pronounce.
Why? What do people say?
I think one of the things that when I was a kid, people used to call me Terrence occasionally.
Oh, Terrence.
I'd never heard the name Terrence before. And so I was like, what is this weird affectation that these people have where they pronounce names plurally? Like, I don't understand this. Why are they so weird?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, people never know how to spell my name. They never say it right. It's just, it's a whole thing. I don't want to complain about it, but it's just like, I understand the pain.
of Lakin.
Yes, of Lakin. Poor
who's
Lakin.
Who's now 30 years old, Lakin.
Yeah. Man, way older than me.
Yeah. Well, she was 11 in 2001. So at the time that we're recording this here on the 1 year belated 15th anniversary of Big Brother 2. So she would now be 27, Lakin.
There you go.
Lakin, yeah. Stegall, if she's not married or anything like that. That's a new name.
Okay. We also get Nicole asking Will if he's Doogie Howser.
Yeah, yeah, because he says that he's a doctor,
right?
And yeah, Nicole has like reactions to everything. We also see, yep, Nicole like really upset Kent that apparently in the casting they asked her like which two bodily functions would you be most embarrassed about. Like, what kind of question is that? It's not even which one bodily function would you be asked about to experience in the house, and she describes, to put it mildly, going number two and changing a feminine hygiene product. And Kent is just like completely like really offended.
That's such an early 2000s question where it's like, oh man, we're gonna be edgy and talk about bodily functions. Like,
yeah. Kent is just very upset. Kent is just turning up his nose at just about everything that goes on here in the house.
Oh yeah, he says these people are, they're very freewheeling. You know, these people, if they had a chance to screw somebody in this house, they'd do it. And by screw, he didn't mean like how we talk about screw nowadays in the house. We're like, oh, they screwed them over. He meant like screw. Like, he was like, oh man, they're gonna screw each other, and it's gonna be weird.
Yeah. Well, because Nicole says at this big meeting, she's like, all right, you know what? Everybody just needs to get naked and and get it over with. And Kent is like really just upset about that.
Yeah, it's such a weird vibe to me watching them talk about sex, because the way they talk about it is like, it's like how I, like my group of friends would talk about it in high school, you know, like, mm-hmm, it's this taboo thing. And oh my God, we're talking about, oh, we're going to play spin the bottle, or like, oh man,
right,
we're going to get naked, everyone. Oh, whoa. Oh, not naked. It's so funny to watch.
Yeah, that is a good point, that I wonder if maybe just overall society in 2001 was just like a bit more puritanical in nature, and that this was a chance like, okay, everybody, let your hair down, and this is just where it goes.
Yeah.
And I just, maybe in 2017, that just things are a bit more uncensored in everyday conversation, that people might not feel the need to go to that level at the point that they get into the Big Brother house.
Yeah, I agree.
All right.
We also get Will commenting on how diverse a group it is, and I really think that that's something that's like, not only in the sense of like diversity, but like in terms of age diversity and coming from different places around the country. I think they really pushed for that with this casting, and it's something that they've definitely fallen out of in recent seasons.
Well, certainly age diverse, but we have, you know, one black person in Monica, and Autumn, I'm not sure what her background is, but other than that, you know, we have 10 Caucasian people in the house. It's super diverse, Dr. Will.
And that's something that Big Brother will continue to do.
Yes,
to this day.
Yes. That will establish a long-standing tradition on that front also.
Yeah, we're going to get rid of of the age diversity and just stick with the non-diverse everything else. I think that's a, probably a good choice, right?
Yes. So they were going to stick with that. All right. So still room for improvement on Big Brother after all these years. Taryn, let's talk about this first night food competition, which is going to take place. We are going to institute the peanut butter and jelly into the Big Brother house, which is going to really predate slop as the preeminent have-not piece of substance that the house guests will get. They have a challenge where we have a 2002 Buick Rendezvous out on the basketball court. No basketball court in the current version of the Big Brother house. And what they have to do in this competition is load up a bunch of bags of groceries and get all of the people into the car and close the doors. It really would have been a terrible commercial for the Buick Rendezvous if they were like, oh, we can't fit all these groceries in the car.
Yeah, like the point is like, look at how much space you have in the car, and then they're not able to do it.
It's like, wow, they fit in all those bags of groceries into a Buick Rendezvous, and if they were like, yeah, we can't do it, the car's not big enough,
not even close, this is not working.
No way. All right. So they do that. They have 60 seconds to do it. They get everybody into the car. A lot of people are commenting on how Justin is squashing people again. Justin will continue being a bull in a china shop for the full 10 days that he's in the house.
Yeah. But Bungie, Justin sat on me. He sat on me. It was not a comfortable position.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have a bit of a twist on this first food competition in Big Brother history where somebody's going to win the car. The last person to stay in the car is going to win the car when they get out of the house. No sleeping, no bathroom breaks. If you touch the ground, you're out.
Yeah, I love this twist, actually, because I'm not a fan of the food competitions. I feel like it was kind of like a holdover of the first season where they needed random things, you know, just to be thrown into the game to make things interesting. But the food competitions for me never really worked. I did like this one a lot, though, because of the twist at the end. I like the idea that they all have, it's basically an endurance competition inside of a car, but there's a lot of leeway. There's a lot of, there's a much more casual feel to it. And you have this, the decision of, do you want to stay in here and try to win the car? Do you want to go out and socialize with the people who are outside of it now? And everything that goes into that.
But I think what was fun about it in terms of watching it now is that nobody realized that's what it was until, like, I think that people would naturally assume that at the point where Julie announced that to current house guests, because Nicole is the one who says, okay, why don't we just say whoever gets the car, the last person to get the car, that's the person that goes home. That's how we'll decide it. And Boogie's like, wait, hold on. You mean nominated or goes home? She's like, no, goes home. And which is really just playing into this narrative of Nicole is calling all the shots. And then people just start pouring out of the car after that idea is floated about whoever gets the car is going to be evicted from the game. And again, this is sort of like really feeding into Nicole's bossy narrative. And then also everybody just peels out of the car.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what a ridiculous thing to say, right? Like nobody, I don't think anybody who had ever, like if they had seen the show before, they would have never, she would have never proposed something like that. The idea that, okay, we're just going to give somebody the car and then go through the entire week where two people are nominated and we're all going to just come together and agree that one of them, the person that got the car is the one that's going to go home. Mm-hmm. It's just such an absurd notion, but obviously immediately puts everybody in the mind of like, well, I don't want to have the car then. I don't want to go home.
Yeah, and early prizes will factor into people going home. I think that the Lori Valenti factor will be in play in future seasons of Big Brother. But that being said, we get down to just three people left in the car. That's going to be Cheryl, Kent, and Autumn. Kent's in the front seat, and he's sitting there. He's not budging. He's basically saying like that he needs this car for his family. And it's interesting that this happens on the first night because Kent is really just still in the mode of that I am providing for my family. I think that sort of like gets softened as people, like the further they're away from their families, they sort of like forget that they have a family and stuff like that. Where, or maybe they're not as self-interested the further along they go because they're sort of like just like like you're brainwashed into thinking that, no, I live in the Big Brother house. I don't have a family.
Yeah, and these are real people that I'm playing with, and I can't betray them.
But Kent is just very much in that my wife will kill me if I get out of this car. I'm not budging. I have to win this car for my wife.
Yeah, and he was basically saying, like, she told him if there's a car, he needs to get it for her, something along those lines. And so no matter what Autumn says about, I don't even have a car, I'm a single mother, I need this, it doesn't matter to Kent.
Right, and he's saying, I gotta win this car for my wife. And she's like, yeah, but I don't even have a husband. And then,
I don't even have a husband.
Yeah, Cheryl is very quickly like, you know what, I'm gonna get out of the car. She's just gonna get out.
Good move.
Yeah. I like when Justin comes over and he's like trying to help. He's like, you know, how much do you really even want this car? Kat's like, stop it.
Basically, like, other people are coming now, and other people kind of feel like, obviously, Autumn has the greater need here, so let's just try and guilt Kent into coming out. Monica was offering him her bed to get out, and he was like, no, nope, not gonna happen.
Right. And really, nothing is gonna break Autumn's way in her entire stay in the Big Brother house.
No, not at all.
Like, there's not one thing that she wants to happen that happens.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Just every single thing that she desires, the opposite of that will happen to her.
Yeah, you know, maybe she should have recognized that and started to work like an opposite player, where, like, oh man, I'm gonna be nominated for eviction, I'm gonna volunteer, because then it wouldn't have happened, because just constantly everything goes the opposite of what she wants.
Yeah. And Kent says to her, well, look at everybody inside, they're all making plans. We'll be the first two kicked out of the house. And I wrote, well, you're half right, Kent.
Yeah. Well, it's like,
well, I guess, like, if you don't count Justin.
That's true. It's like he found exactly what to say to Autumn to get her to go out. Like, oh, you're not going to have bonding time with people. They're not going to like you as much. She was like, immediately, like, oh no,
yeah,
oh no, I need to get out of here.
So, not one of the all-time great endurance competitions in reality TV history. It goes 1 hour and 36 minutes before Autumn gets out and Kent wins the car. Kent winning the car really became like a non-story, that it's not even mentioned again. Even when Boogie is trying to figure out the nominations, like, it's really not even something that's talked about, where it's like, well, Kent did get a car already.
Yeah, it's funny because they talk about Kent as, like, Kent is annoying, I can't stand him, maybe I would put him up for those reasons, but never for the car, which is weird because you'd think they'd want to throw more advertising in for it. Maybe it was deliberate because they didn't want to, who knows?
Right, I think that the people at Ford said, look, we can't have people thinking if they get a Ford Rendezvous, people are going to be targeting them because of that. Only good things happen to people when they get a Ford Rendezvous. It should not be some sort of cross to bear for anybody.
Yeah, no car curse for Big Brother.
No car curse. Okay, so as you mentioned, we are going to quickly get to spin the bottle / truth or dare. Now, Nicole is going to be sort of, I feel like, weird about picking her spots when she can and when she can't participate in these sort of activities, because she is very much involved in spin the bottle, truth or dare.
Yeah, I think I imagine that what she was thinking was, she's not going to do a dare. She's just going to choose truth if it ever comes to her. And if she doesn't have to do a dare, then she's probably fine.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is definitely a moment where, even though she is participating, and that's better than not participating, at least for her, I think maybe the way that she's participating is still a little bit a little bit aggressive for some of the people, and, you know, not the best way to fit in, I guess.
Yeah, so that we have a Nicole asking Hardy, who would you hook up with in the house? And Hardy gives the most Hardy answer ever. He's like,
oh, yes.
Nobody at this time. Yes, at this stage.
at this stage of the game, yeah.
Stop it. Okay. And I like when Hardy asks Justin, how many women have you slept with in 24 hours? What is the most number of women you've had sex with in a 24-hour period? And Justin reveals 3.
Yeah. And it's such a perfect, like, Justin answer. He's like, yeah, it was like the girl next door, the girl around the corner.
Yeah, it was my birthday, and I had one girl over here, and one girl down the block, and one girl around the corner. So there's 3. What?
Yeah. It's like, of course. Like, what are you guys talking about? Like,
right. There's also a really crazy dare that I think, does Boogie get this from Nicole, of like, go behind Krista and then spank your bare ass like in her ear. And Boogie's like, okay, I'll do it. It's what you want. I didn't ask for this.
He was a little quick to jump on that one.
He's like, this is not what I would be doing right now, but I got to obey the rules of the game. And Kent is just triggered throughout this whole event. Not happy.
He says he's grossed out. He's like, everything they do is sexual in nature.
Yeah.
He's not having it.
And then back to reality a little bit. You know, Bunky is concerned about, you know, with all this truth going on, that he doesn't necessarily want to be outed yet. There's some talk in the house about where's the gay guy. Yeah. And Justin is like, hey, I'm the gay guy. I'm totally gay. And then, you know, ha, ha, ha. But again, triggered Kent shows up again to tell the boy, you really scared me. You really scared me with that gay comment. I thought you were totally gay.
Man, yeah, you scared me, man. Thank God you weren't.
Yeah, and Kent tells us, you know, dead serious in the diary room, that he thinks that being gay is perverse. He doesn't think any family would want that around their family. He says, you know, these sickos, weirdos, and freaks, you know, don't throw it in my face. So he really just comes out as, you know, 100%, no doubt, anti-gay. But Taryn, the real comedy, I think, comes from, we get this whole thing about how anti-gay, doesn't want anything to do with anybody gay. And then Kent immediately goes into alliance talk with Justin. But Kent has a very weird way of framing his alliance.
Yeah.
He comes out of this whole, like, you know, no, nothing gay for me. No, I don't want anything to do with anything being gay. But his way of making an alliance is to Justin. He comes out and asks him, so do you want to hook up? Do you want to hook up with me?
Yeah, dude. And like, let's also hook up with Hardy.
Yeah.
And
I want to hook up with all the guys in the house.
And isn't it Bunky that asks him, like, what do you mean by hook up?
Yeah. Yeah, what do you mean by that?
And then he was like, just strategically, and then, but he continues to use the phrase.
I just want to hook up with every guy here.
Yeah, he does. Even though, like you said, he said it's deviant, it's perverse. He says 90% of Americans don't want that anywhere near them, their families or themselves. And that quote, the sickos and weirdos quote, is straight to Bunky. He says, you know, it used to be sickos, weirdos, and freaks. Now it's alternative lifestyle, and it's not cool to think that it's not cool. But don't throw that in my face and try to tell me it's normal. And then he goes around talking about, you know, let's hook up.
Yeah.
Let's get all the guys together. We'll get a good hookup session going. And
I mean, I'd hook up with any guy together. Here. I wouldn't even think twice about it. Every guy here. I'm all about it.
We'll hook up with him. Mike, definitely. Justin, we've already hooked up.
And poor Bunky is just like his worst fears are coming true.
Absolutely.
He was so afraid that there would be somebody that wasn't understanding. And then you have the guy who's not understanding, like on the first night, like volunteering this information about how, you know, there's one thing I really don't get. So poor Bunky, that he will be going through a lot of, a lot of crying throughout the season for Bunky.
Yeah, interestingly enough, though, not a whole lot in this first.
Yeah, yeah, he's going to really take this very well. It's going to be other stuff down the road. Well, maybe this broke him, and then he had nothing left moving forward. Okay, we get some glimpses of Thirsty Autumn. She's trying to get into bed with Hardy also. Hardy, very quickly, says she is needy. She's asking him questions, and wants him to, quote unquote, be affectionate with her. And as she asks him questions, he's like, you can ask me whatever you want. I'm an open book. She's like, even about sex, like, and he's like, yes. All right, fine. Even about sex, please go away.
Yeah, he says, I mean, it's such a terrible segment for Autumn, because she starts out, Hardy is beautiful, he's so amazing, and then immediately cuts to Hardy, she's so needy, she's like a child, she has some serious issues she needs to address, I don't think she loves herself, like, she really needs to understand, like, he's like going through a whole psychoanalysis of like who Autumn is, and it's just so, so bad.
Yeah, it just, you know, that it's hard to not feel terrible for Autumn. I mean, she really is like a child emotionally.
Yeah, yeah. And Hardy points that out.
Yeah. All right. So when we get to day two, we get to see a little bit more of the cast hanging out for breakfast. Everybody says that they are pretty much liking each other so far.
So far. And Will talks about, you know, within the first 24 hours, my whole strategy has been turned upside down. I was expecting a group of guys that were interesting but malleable, and that's not really what I got. I got guys that were really cool, and I wanted to hang out with them. And I think that's really emblematic of Will's game gameplay in these first couple of weeks.
Yeah, I don't even know what he's talking about.
Right. It's like, but yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, was this something that was prompted by the diary room? Because it really didn't make any sense. It reminded me the beginning of it, of his infamous speech in All Stars, where he says, I went in and now I hate you all. But he's like, I was expecting a group of guys that were interesting, and that's not what I got. I got guys that are cool.
Like, right. Well, he says interesting yet malleable.
Right.
But that's not what I got. So he got guys who are boring but headstrong.
But also cool.
But I want to hang out with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe he was just talking about Will or Mike and Justin.
Maybe Dr. Will just finding his sea legs.
Yeah.
Okay, so we get to our first announcement of the HOH. We reveal the HOH room to the house guests. We are going to crown our first ever HOH in Big Brother history. In addition to your own room, you also get maid service, Taryn. Can you explain how maid service works?
I was surprised, but this is not something that I remembered. But I think it's just that somebody comes and just like does your laundry and probably makes the bed for you, which honestly, a lot of the house guests need in modern seasons.
Right. They come in and make the bed. I get the laundry. I feel like that they do your laundry still on Big Brother, but if you're HOH.
Oh, do they? Well,
you would know better than me, but I feel like I've heard that before.
It's certainly possible.
Okay.
It's not something I really keep track of.
So we have this giant wheel of superlatives that we're going to bring out. And so we're going to spin the wheel, and then it's going to assign two characteristics. And then the person who's up there has to say who is who. So what we're going to see first is, which house guest is the smartest and who's the sexiest based on the arrows on the wheel? And we end up with Will and Cheryl, and then we have to ask, okay, how many people of these two would you vote for HOH? Cheryl got 6 of the votes out of the 9 people that were voting, and then Will is eliminated.
Yeah, and Will talks about, like, I knew as soon as I saw smartest that I was going to be labeled the smartest. And of course, Will says that. And I think it's also very, very fitting that Will is the very first person eliminated from the very first HOH competition.
Right. He could have won this one really against his will, but yeah. He ends up being the first person eliminated. That's very funny. And so this quickly like goes into a montage, but we do have some weird things on the wheel, like the horniest person. Do you feel like that Big Brother would still use that in 2017 to describe a house guest as horny in a game?
Absolutely not, but not necessarily because they'd be afraid of using like the concept of horny, just they wouldn't use that word. I feel weird saying horny, like who says that anymore?
It's weird that it was on the wheel.
Yeah, like I could see them doing like thirstiest house guest. I could see them doing
thirsty,
that.
Yeah,
nowadays.
I could definitely see thirsty on the wheel, but horny was weird to be on the wheel. Also, Autumn was branded as the smelliest house guest, which might speak to why Hardy was so quickly to dismiss her.
Poor Autumn. Yeah. Anything bad that's going to happen is going to happen to Autumn until she leaves.
Okay. So we get down into the montage of... So it comes down to Mike versus Cheryl for HOH.
I also thought it was fitting that Will and Nicole were the first two out of this competition and ultimately end up as the final two in the house.
Yeah. A lot of interesting things at play. So Mike versus Cheryl, neither of them seems to want it. In hindsight, might not have been the worst thing for Cheryl to get this first HOH. And they get a chance to make a quote unquote second impression where you can sort of like tell the house why they should vote for you to win. And Cheryl just sort of like punts on it. She's like, made the best person win. She doesn't really say, let me be your first HOH. I'll listen to you guys or anything like that. She just sort of like says, I don't need this.
Basically. I mean, it was like a nothing speech. Maybe she's just not a public speaker.
Yeah. And Mike, while he also delivers nothing of substance, he does it in a rap. And then that seems to be enough energy where people choose him. Do we get a vote count on this?
I think it was 6 or 7 votes for Mike. Mm-hmm. But I didn't count.
Yeah. So he wins HOH in overwhelming fashion, perhaps feeling like he had a mandate, Taryn. Did you like this as the first ever HOH competition? I mean, it was in some way determined by the will of the house.
Yeah, you know, I think I had fonder memories of it than the actual competition warrants, because it really ultimately just comes down to a vote for who is the head of household, because you're always voting for two different people. So if there was a majority in the house that just decided we want this person to be HOH, that person would have been HOH because they just would have voted for that person every time they came up until the end. But I think the way that it plays out, because people aren't thinking in terms of that kind of strategy, it was very interesting to see, to force people to put labels on other people and to vote and all that kind of stuff. I like it better as a concept than just, you know, asking questions or competing in some sort of physical challenge.
Yeah. All right. So Boogie becomes the first ever HOH in Big Brother history. So congratulations to Mike Boogie. And now he gets the HOH room. And that's sort of where we end the first episode of Big Brother 2.
Yeah. Krista says the HOH room is definitely the Love Shack.
The Love Shack, yeah. And Nicole talks about the sex mirror. Julie Chen sort of sets up how the episodes are going to work. I'd actually forgotten about this, that Big Brother used to be on Saturday nights also. I think this was on Tuesday nights, Thursday nights, and Saturday nights at this point. I'm not sure when they made the leap to being on Sundays.
Yeah, great. I didn't remember that at all. You texted me like, man, I forgot it was on Saturdays. And I was like, what?
Yeah, well, it all started to come back to me because then I remember watching this first episode of Big Brother 2, and then I had gone to like a friend's wedding on that Saturday. So I had never seen this next episode that we're going to talk about until, you know, you take it for granted now, season pass. Oh, it's on the DVR. I'll watch it. Now, like, this is 2001. If you didn't set up a VCR ahead of time to record, which was a pain in the neck, I know there's going to be people that are listening to this that were not born when we are talking for what we're talking about. It was you know, a major thing to, if you're going to miss an episode.
Yeah, I can imagine. I looking back, I don't know how many episodes I caught as a kid. I'm sure it was most of them, but it definitely, I remember, I'm just old enough that I remember like the tail end of recording things on VCR and recording right. over things on accident. And definitely a big hassle. And you needed like a separate, like, I don't know, very confusing and unfortunate.
Okay, so let's keep going through this Saturday episode, which is going to get into a lot of the Bunky and Kent situation, and we'll eventually get Mike's nominations by the end of this episode on the first Saturday here of Big Brother 2, where Boogie's HOH is really starting to kick in, where he realizes that he is going to be the person who's going to dash the hopes and dreams of one person.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if you caught this, but Mike is wearing a gator shirt and mm-hmm. he's doing silly dances, and they're just out of nowhere. I thought of Zach Rance and how Mike is in this moment, at least on this season, almost like a weird precursor to Zach Rance. He's wearing the gator shirt. He's doing the crazy things. Did that occur to you at all? Because I don't think that their personalities are very similar, but it just really struck me.
I think it's an astute observation. I never thought of Mike Boogie as sort of like a proto Rance, but I mean, I definitely, when we talk about like this lineage of like, oh, okay, we need this type of character in the house. This is what appeals to casting. Okay. There's a Boogie type. There's a party atmosphere. So I do think that while it's not a direct through line, I think what you're saying makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Just the gator shirt especially. I was just like, oh my God, it's like I'm watching Zach. It was very strange. But yeah, as you mentioned, you know, Boogie is talking a lot about how he feels bad about having to put two people up for eviction. He's going to dash the hopes and dreams of somebody that's coming on the show. And this is the kind of, I think, detail and pace of these early seasons where you really, you take for granted that feeling, the first feeling of like, I am really cutting somebody here and that makes me feel bad. We kind of gloss over those emotions in today's Big Brother.
Yeah, you definitely sense that Boogie is feeling like some gravity to this. Oh, wait, I have to pick the two people and one of them is going to go home. I mean, that going on one of these shows now, I don't think it's nearly as big of a deal as it was then. Because you, I mean, that not to overstate it, but I think that there was a little bit of like, there had been at this point, what, 32 people that had played Survivor. There had been, what, 10 or 12 people that were on the first Big Brother. So, I mean, there was less than 100 people that had been on these shows. And you were going to be responsible for naming two of them. And one of them was going to be, you know, the first boot off of the show. This is still a very big deal.
Yeah, especially for somebody like Boogie, who sees this as a huge opportunity to further his career and different sort of aspects of what he wants to do with his life. He would certainly feel very upset if he was cut that early. So I think that definitely adds to his empathy for whoever he's eliminating at this stage. But he does make sure to say at the end of it, I know what I came here for, and they do too, and this is just the name of the game.
Yeah, Mike says, I'm here to play the game and I respect the game. I just thought it was such a weird thing to say at a point where nobody even knows what this game is.
Right. And but I think Boogie helps establish what this game is. You know, his infamous quote in later seasons is like, you know, you can bounce checks in the Big Brother house. And like, he's always had this attitude about it. And I love that he brought that to the game so early on as, you know, I feel bad about this, but that's the name of the game. And this game is cutthroat. And that's what I've got to do.
So Kent is going to talk to Boogie about his plan. And again, he's trying to hook up with all the guys in the house. And he says to Boogie, like, hey, man, these chicks ain't chicks.
Yeah.
Like, what? What are you even talking about, Kent?
You guys better understand. These chicks ain't chicks, man. These are guys and competitive guys. And Boogie's right. Just like, meaning. And he's like, meaning they're out to cut your nuts off.
Right. I mean, the thing about Kent and why he's a particularly bad Big Brother player is that he just has no chill in terms of anything. In terms of like, he's just always like game talk. Okay, they're the enemy. We're working against them. And you need to take your foot off the gas at some point during Big Brother.
Yeah. I mean, he was just full force, all about hooking the guys up. And making sure that he hooked up with every single one of them. And then, you know, he's basically trying to propose the very first bro alliance in Big Brother. He wants it to be him, Boogie, Will, Justin, and Bunky. And Boogie's not really having it. He can't really stand Kent because Kent is just so aggressive.
Yeah. And so that Mike says he'll marinate on it. We end up seeing Bunky's side of things where he's afraid the guys are getting together and they are going to vote him out because they'll find out that he's gay. And he ends up coming out first to Autumn. And he tells her about how he has somebody at home named Greg. And Autumn, I think, was probably the safest person to come out to.
Yeah, you know, this was actually kind of a sweet scene to watch, and probably one of Autumn's best. It was great to see her obviously be, you know, so supportive, and to see the actual action of Bunky coming out to somebody. This was really the scene that they chose to represent all of when he comes out to everybody, because we don't really see the individual scenes apart from this one. And I actually found it. I found that it touched me a lot more than I expected to see this, because it's such a raw and emotional thing, and it does take a lot of courage, and I don't know, it was interesting to watch.
Okay, so Bunky is getting more confident about telling people in the house what's actually going on and who he is. Meanwhile, though, we see that Bunky maybe did have reason to be extra suspicious, that he has some sort of like a rainbow on his suitcase. And Mike and Kent are talking about how that he might be gay.
Yeah, they basically figure it out. And I think Will was in there with them, too. And they're talking about like, you know, we found the colors of his thing. It's like a rainbow color. He's probably the gay guy. And Kent kind of, this is like probably the ugliest thing Kent does. He tries to like solidify this guy's group to be like, yeah, you know, we've got to solidify our thing because Bunky is gay, and like maybe we need to get him out.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that they seem to be really offended by is that he's lying to us. He's right. trying to get one over on us. He's saying he has a wife. And Boogie tells that to his face. I didn't like how you said that you had a wife. And he's like, well, I never said that. I never quite said that. So, you know, this is a issue that we certainly did talk about with Survivor, between Jeff Varner and Zeke, the important distinction between privacy and deception. But you see people dealing with that all the way back here in Big Brother 2.
Yeah, absolutely. And it feels wrong to be like, it feels like an excuse to be like, oh, you know, I'm totally fine with you being gay, but why did you have to lie to us? Because, you know, especially because Bunky was trying to be as honest as he could without, you know, revealing this private information. And this was probably the ugliest part of the entire season, is this idea that he was lying to them because he didn't correct them when they assumed that they were that he had a wife. It sucks that's sort of like the thing that he has to counter, the very first thing he has to counter as soon as he comes out to these people. But luckily they get over it pretty quickly. And I think they come to understand that he was trying to be as honest as he could.
Right. And so we go back to a little bit of the drumbeat that Nicole is getting on people's nerves. We see her talking with Kent. We see her talking with the women about different things. And she's really not bonding well with anybody. Boogie tells us that he would definitely consider nominating Nicole.
Yeah, he says the first person I would nominate is Nicole. The second person I would nominate is Nicole, which I thought was hilarious because at the time of recording this, we were watching Big Brother Canada 5, and Karen made that same joke about Kevin 17 years later.
I wrote that joke. I wrote that.
Yeah.
So she's got like it was a montage of like her saying like different things and Kent's describing her as vulgar. Autumn even says nobody likes Nicole. Nicole is telling us how she's going to try to make somebody hit her. Boogie tells Nicole www.zipit.com in the diary room. Is that a Dr. Evil line? Yeah.
I don't know. Is it?
I think it might be.
Man, okay. Ripping those lines off.
Yeah. All right. So Nicole and Bunky are going to be talking. And Nicole is, again, you know, a sympathetic ear in Bunky. But she's talking about how maybe this is not a good experience for her. It's not working great.
Yeah. She says she always gets along with everybody in real life. And now she's put into the situation where she's surrounded by people that she wouldn't normally interact with or get along with. And that's something that's very common in these shows, that it really takes people out of their comfort zone and forces you to interact with the people you'd normally avoid. And that's what causes so much of the conflict. Nicole is basically the poster child for this concept of really being taken out of our element, forced to interact with these people she doesn't get along with, and really struggling with it.
On top of everything, Nicole has a debilitating social phobia, Taryn. She cannot go into any body of water.
Yes.
She has a terrible fear.
She once got scabies in a public pool, and so never going to happen again.
It's never going to happen. Dr. Will tries to explain, no, there's chlorine in the pool. Nothing can live in there. She says chlorine freaks her out, too.
Yeah, chlorine's bad too. And she talks about how she stuck her legs in the other day, and that was huge for her. And I really liked, there was a subtle like editing touch where they go back and they show the replay of her putting her legs in the water in black and white as like the video proof that she did this horrible thing.
She did it. But it's another thing that's sort of like driving a wedge between her. There's like a lot of group activity sort of led by Boogie and Will. And I think there's a lot of peer pressure to go along with their activities. If you don't, you're sort of a pariah. There's a lot of stuff in the pool. There's a lot of stuff eventually in the hot tub. And Nicole does not really want to be part of this. And so because of that, it's even pushing her further out of the group.
Yeah, and this is going to be her major storyline for these four episodes at the very least.
Okay, so we're going to have a luxury challenge here to unlock the hot tub, finally. I'm sure Nicole would have been fine leaving the hot tub locked forever, but we are going to have to get into a giant vat of mud. Taryn, there's some stuff going on where they have to put on bathing suits, but they end up, is this Boogie's idea to put on the women's bathing suits?
Yes, it's Boogie comes up with this idea. He calls them like the Dirty Dozen or whatever. He calls the entire house, and he wants to like get this thing going where they're wearing women's bathing suits, which you know, to each their own, I guess.
Your mileage may vary on that.
Yeah,
yeah. Kent does not participate. Does Bunky participate?
I don't believe so. I believe it's mostly Bunky or not Bunky. It's mostly Hardy, Will, and Mike that are participating in this one.
What about Justin?
I think I don't Justin recall. Did too, actually.
I don't remember if he did. Okay. So they have to go and get into the vat of mud. There's 12 keys in there. They had to get this out. This goes on for a while, Taryn.
Yeah, but this was the first time where I was like, all right, let's get this moving.
Yada yada yada.
Yeah.
They got the hot tub unlocked.
Right. And you know, they really, really try to play it up. They've got like the tinkly music at the end where it's like, oh man, we really bonded as a house. And man, Nicole really stepped up because she got in the water with other people.
And, right. And it wasn't just water, it was mud. And Nicole is also really OCD, a neat freak. So in addition, she doesn't want to be in the body of water. She doesn't want to be covered in goo, but she did it for the group. And so it was maybe the worm is turning for Nicole.
Yeah. She has this whole little arc in this one episode, which is something that I don't think we see very often nowadays, which is you know, she starts out, we introduced her, she's ostracized from the group, she stands out from other people, but then she does this big thing, she steps up for the team, she goes into the muddy water, and now she's talking about being like having this redemption segment. She's talking about, you know, Hardy's talking about how he's getting to know her a little bit more, she's talking with Will and bonding with him a little bit more, and we're starting to see her in a more positive light after having just seen her in that negative light.
Yeah, we see her with Kent as well. So she is trying to play the sympathy card a little bit, trying to get to know everybody a bit better. Bunky is going to be back having another conversation, this time with Monica. And I'm not really sure about the logistics of the house, but it looks like that they're like in the storage room, which is next to the HOH, and Boogie can hear them through the wall. And they're talking about how Bunky doesn't want to be keeping this secret from people. Boogie calls them in, and this is when they have that conversation about how Mike Boogie said that he just felt like that Bunky was lying to him. He doesn't like being deceived.
Yeah, and I thought it was a weird decision to immediately tell them, yeah, I could hear what you were saying, because you'd think that he would want to try to use that to his advantage or have a conversation with them knowing the information and trying to rectify it that way. But he just immediately goes out and brings them in and says, hey guys, like, can you come in here? And he has this conversation. And you know, it is a little awkward when he's saying, you know, I wish you would have told us, why did you have to lie about your wife? And Bunky's put in a position where he has to sort of defend himself for not, you know, outing himself, which is uncomfortable, but they get through it and you know, things turn out all right.
Yeah. I think that Boogie just might have felt bad, because I think that he was looking at Bunky as potentially somebody to target. And then when he heard that Bunky was feeling bad about lying to people, then I think he just wanted to sort of like correct whatever misunderstanding was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see that.
I did like Bunky's line where he talks about, hey, you know, vote me out because you think I'm an a-hole, not because of me being gay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like that.
So that was good. All right. So we get some other character moments also. We get a montage about how Kent snores all night.
Yep, Kent's annoying. Kent is a social pariah as well.
Yes, and Mike Boogie wants to keep Kent around, maybe, so he's going to give Kent the HOH room. So I think it was easier. Mike wanted to be sleeping in some of the co-ed bedrooms, I think.
Oh, yes, and Boogie also, Boogie comes up with some games just designed to kiss some of the girls.
Yes, Mike Boogie has a new idea for a game. It's called the Dirty Baker's Dozen, which is very similar to the contest that was in the mud vat, but is in the hot tub and involves whipped cream. And is there fruit involved also?
Yeah, there was like cherries involved or something, or maybe
might have been strawberries.
Strawberries, yeah. This is whipped cream and strawberries. And I didn't really understand the game. Did they have to like pass the strawberries around with the whipped cream with their mouths?
I don't really know how this works, Taryn. You're asking the wrong guy. But it seemed like there was like an idea of like that sort of like started in an innocent place of like, hey, why don't we have a thing where each person, like a different day, they get to pick the group activity. And I'm guessing Mike Boogie had the first shot. And Boogie basically says to them, like, look, I'll play checkers with you guys if you want, if that's what you want to do, but that's not what I'm here for.
Yeah, he's like, all the games I can come up with, the married people are not going to want to participate.
Yeah, yeah. And so we had, it was really a double a problem for Nicole, because being a married person and also involving the hot tub, that was no good. But Kent, we sort of get like the pervy Kent story a little bit here. He's like, I'm fine being the voyeur.
Yeah, that was, man, another weird way of wording things, Kent. You really got to watch out for that.
I'm here to hook up with all the guys and just be a voyeur. That's it. That's it.
These weird freaks and weirdos.
Yeah, and also the thirsty autumn storyline comes up again, where there's some talk about how she was being too aggressive in the hot tub.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that's autumn for you.
Yeah, yes. Okay. So then, meanwhile, we start to get into the first real package on the show about Will and Shannon. About Shannon is into a guy with TAA, teeth, ass, and attitude.
Yeah. They have to have great teeth, nice ass, and a great attitude. And with that attitude comes intelligence. I wasn't aware that attitude and intelligence were two like things that were intertwined.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of the Will and Shannon romance.
Yeah, and she says at one point she gets along much better with men than women because she has a lot of male energy. Yes. She says that to Will. That was another weird way of putting things, I think.
Right. The Dr. Will romance segments with Shannon, it's a lot of Dr. Will negging Shannon.
Oh yeah, I mean that's Will's move.
Yeah, I mean it'll be interesting to see if this translates to his gameplay. But he really is a believer in the okay. I'm gonna say one thing that's kind of rude, and then lure you back in, and then I'm gonna push you away, and I'm gonna bring you back in, and then I'm gonna say I don't even like you, and then say that I think you're really attractive and you like me. A lot of that with Will and Shannon.
Well, he had a lot of work to do because she had a boyfriend at the time.
Yeah and Will will call out her boyfriend coming up in a couple episodes.
Oh yeah, he will.
All right, so Autumn is talking with Boogie about who she wants to get with, which I'm presuming is Hardy. She's saying Justin's not the guy she wants to hook up with, but again, she's getting on Boogie's nerves also.
Yeah, Boogie talks about, he feels like he has to beat her off with a stick. It's like she's a child. She comes on so strong. I mean, this is segues into another just like Autumn is very needy kind of segment. But yeah, I think there was some tension between Boogie and Autumn. I know there was some controversy revolving around like him maybe trying to seduce her, or was she coming on too strong? But I think that happens a little bit later.
Yeah, I don't want to get too much into hearsay, but I believe that all in the same night as the Justin knife incident, I think that they're sort of like a really, really out of control bender that's going on. And I think that sort of comes out of that. I think that that's at that point. So we can discuss that night when we get to the eviction episode. But there's a lot of, so maybe throwing some shade against Autumn. Could she be in the mix as the nominations are starting to loom? We also get a package about how everybody loves Cheryl. And Cheryl is really kind of like a T-Bird type, where she is just always is like a sunny disposition. Everybody likes hanging out with her. She's having so much fun.
Yeah, she's sweet. She's fun-loving. Everybody loves Cheryl.
Yeah, really setting the stage for her. She can't possibly go home.
Never.
Okay, so we're going to unveil, Taryn, for the first time, the nomination key box for the ceremony. Not super impressive.
No, Boogie's like, this is the box of fate. And I think Krista says in the diary room, it's like a Pandora box.
Yes, it would be. It would be. And we see, I believe also for the first time, the memory wall is there in the house.
Yeah. The memory wall is definitely something that's going to stay in the Big Brother canon for quite a while.
Yes. Or as I'd like to call it, the analog memory wall.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's just like it's It's all digital nowadays.
Yes, yes. But this was actual pictures of the house guests up on the wall. Okay. So nominations talk. Who's going to go up? And Mike is really have, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown. He's got to figure this all out. And so we're getting to the ceremony again. Mike really sets up a lot of pressure, very hard to do. And we get to Taryn. We're back to a key ceremony.
Yes, they have to pull the keys one by one. And it's, I think something that was interesting was there was barely any music. And there was some music, but it was very subtle. And it just played out it was a little bit awkward, but also really kind of put you there in that moment.
Right. The whole sequence, again, like when we go back and watch the first couple seasons of Survivor, like they really are still figuring out what they're doing at these tribal councils. So they have the key box, but there's no sort of like taking the first key out. Mike hands the first key to Bunky, but it's no Bunky. You are safe. In later seasons, we sort of have like a sword being unsheathed sound effect. Yeah. We don't have that. And it's very quiet. It's just sort of handing things off. You know, you have a couple people, they don't even say the person's name. So Bunky ends up getting the first key. Was that Mike sort of make good for the whole misunderstanding?
You've got to assume so.
Yeah. Hardy gets the second key, followed by Monica, then Krista, then Shannon and Will. So Boogie's like trying to throw people off the scent. So not really. Again, like, do you think that was already a thing of like, I'm putting my favorite people first? Was that strategy just sort of like built into this?
I think so. I think like when you're looking at the order of things, anybody's first instinct is going to be like, well, I don't want to be too obvious. I want to, you know, put some people first, put some people last for particular reasons. And I don't think that strategy ever really evolved too much. I think it stayed the same throughout the entire time that the key ceremony was still a thing.
Okay. So then after Shannon and Will came Kent, then Autumn, then Justin, and like giant Foley sound effect, Taryn. Like,
good replication of the sound.
Like, whoa, oh my god, Nicole. Nicole and Cheryl are on the block.
Not Nicole and Cheryl, no.
Yes, it is. And so those are our first nominees. And how does Mike do with the first post nomination speech?
He basically just lays it out for Nicole. He really, I mean, I think if he made the speech in a modern season of Big Brother, it would be like there'd be tons of dramatic music behind it. You'd show Nicole crying in the diary room afterward. It was pretty harsh against her. He was like really calling her out as like you're separate from the group. You don't try hard enough. Stuff like that.
He says you've been the least adaptive to the situation. Does he say anything to Cheryl?
I don't think he did. I think his idea was, and he says in the diary room, like, in this instance, I'm putting up a likable person against somebody that's not very likable at all. I think they know that their fate is sealed. It's basically me being a one-man jury, which is obviously, like, famous last words. But I think he really felt like, this is a very obvious move. I'm telling Nicole what I'm doing. I don't even need to talk to Cheryl because it's obvious that she's going to stay.
Right. We see people talking about maybe is Cheryl more of a threat. Kent thinks Mike made a mistake, but it certainly does look dire for Nicole heading out of this second episode of Big Brother. Taryn, one of the fun things I think to do with this, like we did in the Evolution Strategy on Survivor, we're able to sort of like look back with sort of an understanding of modern day strategy and canon of the show and sort of say, where did people go wrong? If you were going to sort of dissect Boogie's decision here, was it the decision that was bad, or was it the way that he went about it was bad?
It's twofold, where it's especially in the first week, because things are so fluid, you don't want to put up anybody where going home would be a bad thing. If you really need Nicole out of the game, you need to nominate one of her closest allies up next to her, because then there's no obvious difference. She can't campaign against you as her main selling point and have that be what saves her. Like what happens, she has to campaign against the person that she's allied with, and they both have the same pluses and minuses. So there's no like, oh, I'll go after Chilltown and Cheryl won't. It's we're both going to go after her, but so I need to come up with reasons why I'm campaigning against the person I'm sitting next to. And then also, obviously, the way that he went about it was it came off very arrogant. He talked about being a one-man jury. He really felt like he was making this decision for the house, and that came through in not only the message came through with the nominations, but in the way that he behaved afterward, which really alienated a lot of the people and made the campaign of I'll Go After Chilltown so effective.
Who should he have nominated Nicole with? Autumn?
Yeah, you know, somebody like Autumn, definitely, I think. I think Autumn is probably the best choice there because, you know,
she would have been crying all week. Like, I don't want to be the first person to go home. Don't
exactly. Yeah. And when you think about, when you think in terms of, like, he was thinking in terms of everybody likes Cheryl, therefore nobody's going to vote her out. But what he needed to be thinking, and I don't blame him because, again, like, you know, this is the very first nomination. But what you need to be thinking is, who is somebody that nobody likes? Who is somebody that nobody thinks is a threat? Because when you look at somebody like Cheryl that everybody likes, you're thinking, oh, well, she's going to win in the end. She's somebody that can do things in this game. Whereas Autumn is much more of an outcast, and nobody's particularly that fond of Autumn. So nobody's going to see her as a big threat. And if Autumn presents herself as, I will also go after Chilltown if I need to, then you're obviously going to pick the less threatening person to your own game that you think you can control a little more over somebody like Nicole, who is, you know, a much more aggressive force in the game.
Right. Mike does a bad job of handling Cheryl in terms of managing her expectations to the point where she's ready to go after Mike and Will coming out of this week. Some of the things that maybe they could have controlled better, and again, I don't know how much we could say they have to have foresight for this, but the week, the rest of the week is going to spin horribly out of control for Mike and Will, culminating in the elimination of Justin from the game. I think that they are looked at as sort of bad influences and sort of like encouraging all of the bad behavior going on in the house, and there's a backlash that's going to come out of that. So lots of problems in terms of them also being seen as way too powerful early on. And, you know, you're able to sort of take a shot against Mike and Will by keeping Nicole around. So this week will end up going horribly for Mike, but a lot of important lessons learned for both Mike Boogie, all future Big Brother players, and of course, Mike Boogie himself included in ultimately becoming a much better Big Brother player.
Yeah, and it's also, it's the very first HOH, and it's the very first case of HOHitis, and it kind of spread to his alliance as well.
Well, that's what's so amazing about this first season, especially this first week. It's such a great first week, and it's so memorable that this is a week that we can look back and say, no, these things still happen all these years later in terms of how to handle your HOH week.
Yeah, it's such a perfect representation of the game of Big Brother.
And what's to come. All right. So the third episode of Big Brother goes back to the Tuesday night special. We pick things up on day six. Nicole is in rough shape. She's really not handling the nomination well.
Yes. And she's the first person that we see, and this will happen often as well, to say, I knew it was going to happen. I knew I was going to be nominated.
Right. And she is not going to whore herself to try to stay in the game. We cut to a shot of Krista in the hot tub topless.
Yes. She's not going to give up her ethics and whore herself. Yet again, another thing that we often see out of people who are just nominated.
Right. Now, Taryn, I know that you were definitely too young to be following the live feeds back in Big Brother 2, but I was on the live feeds a lot in Big Brother 2. And I think that, just so you know, full disclosure, I think that the events of this week, because you had to pay for the live feeds in Big Brother 1, they were free. I think it was like $19.95 for the live feeds in Big Brother 2. And I shelled that out, Taryn. I did not really have a ton of disposable income in the summer of 2001, yet there I was on those live feeds.
And Krista in the hot tub was probably something that you were interested in seeing at the time?
Sure. I don't ever recall seeing any sort of like a salacious type thing happening. You know, I was on the East Coast, and these things, as you know, as well-versed as somebody who is trying to follow West Coast Big Brother feeds from the East Coast, I mean, that these things probably had to be happening at like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning for me, if not later.
You know, it's funny because I know they advertise the live feeds now as anything can happen. Watch 24/7, like after dark, like they're you know, showing clips of Shane and Danielle, stuff like that. Were they advertising the live feeds in that way at the time? Do you remember?
I mean, I think that the Big Brother live feeds, even to this day, I think that they're sort of like a little bit of like a wink, wink, sort of like, hey, you don't know what you're going to see here. I mean, like, typically the image that goes up is sort of like a camera, and then like in the lens of the camera is like a girl in a bikini on a raft. Where I mean, that's like the default Big Brother live feed iconography. So I think that sort of subliminal. I think that that is sort of still marketed as a selling point of Big Brother.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they've leaned into it even more. It's interesting to me.
I feel like that they've leaned out of it
Really?
To a degree in modern days. Like, I feel like probably the height of it was maybe the After Dark season premiere of the Till Death Do Us Part, and I think that we have. I think that we certainly have curved back a bit.
Yeah, yeah, I can agree with that. Definitely post season 9. Yeah, mm-hmm. Certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I do think that it's sort of like, you know, a bit of a selling point for some people. Probably, though, that as time has gone by, there are probably better ways to, if you, like Kent, are a voyeur, then there are probably other ways to go than the Big Brother live feeds.
Yeah, and also probably other Big Brother seasons that are better for that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we end up seeing a lot of Nicole's campaigning, talking with Bunky and Autumn. She's trying to get people potentially to turn against the group of Will, Mike, Shannon, and Justin, not yet referred to as Chilltown. That will come later.
Yeah, she's mostly talking about Will here. She says that everyone is annoyed at Will. She structures her campaign as anti-Will. And then we get to, a cut to Will's infamous clip where he says, "My God, half man, half amazing," which is just perfect, Dr. Will.
Yeah. Bunky is even saying that Will is a dictator.
Yes, dictator Will.
Yeah. Okay, so we got another sort of segment about how Will has a thing for Cheryl. She's a smoking hot mom. And while she says that younger men scare her, she has a 17-year-old son. She's not thinking about anything romantic with these younger guys.
Yeah, she said there was an attraction there, though. Like, there was something that drew her to it. She just kind of stays away because of her son.
We do hear some of the other house guests discuss how Cheryl is a big threat, and Ken thinks she could win the game.
Yeah, yeah. Kent says some of these guys think they've got this thing figured out and they're working this game, but it may not be what it appears. That comes right after a confessional from Will where he says he thinks this is a foolproof plan. There's no way Cheryl will go home. But yeah, this is definitely foreshadowing of things to come.
Taryn, could Cheryl win the game?
Well, that's something that was interesting because, you know, they talked about, like, Kent, I think, especially talked about, you know, looking at Cheryl at the end of the game, she's somebody that can win. Nicole is somebody that can't win. And when I was watching it, I was like, well, huh, little do you know, Nicole is such a dominant force in the game. But then I remembered, Nicole doesn't win in the end. So maybe he was onto something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a weird thing because something that's unique to this season and the next one is that the jury is not sequestered and they get to watch the show. So I think it's less about the dynamics in the house and even more about the dynamics of how they're portrayed on the show. And so I don't think we can accurately say whether or not Cheryl could have won the game. I know that people loved her in the game, but maybe if she's portrayed in a way that's not favorable throughout the season, it's not in the cards.
Yeah, I wonder if she's just somebody who ends up being doomed by the sort of like Dawn Meehan sort of mom archetype, where if she gets to the end, do people like judge her with scorn? I don't believe that there has been anybody who is a Big Brother mom figure who goes on to win the game. And tell me if I'm missing anybody. I mean, I'm thinking Maggie, but I believe that she was probably under 30 at the time that she won the game.
Yeah.
Can you think of anybody?
I mean, Maggie was more cult leader than mom. But yeah, no, you're right. There really hasn't been anyone, unless you know, people are listening to this and they're like, well, obviously Karen, who dominated Big Brother Canada 5.
Right. And obviously Maria, who won Big Brother 19 as well.
Yes.
You forget that. So all interesting points. But yeah, it would be interesting to know how Cheryl would have done as a player in an alternate timeline. So we see a little bit of the house guest sort of preening, which leads us to another segment talking about Will. And a lot of people are really annoyed with Will, that he seems to be very wrapped up in himself, which we know to be a fact.
Yes.
He's talking about the film, is it American Psycho?
Yep.
And Will is talking about how great this movie is. He loves this movie. And somewhere along the way, he says he has no sympathy for people. And Kent is really sort of like wielding that against him of how could he be a doctor? And if your kid dies, he doesn't even care.
Yeah. And, you know, he even has the look of like Patrick Bateman from American Psycho, or it's like he really embodies that idea. Talking about the doctor thing, it's something that they really tried to use against him. And, you know, I think just the arrogance and the idea that, you know, Will kind of sees himself as better than other people and doesn't relate to the little people, the real people, is definitely something that really rubs them the wrong way. And this is when we get the Will quote of, I hope that everyone has underestimated my potential for just massive destruction.
Yeah. And so Will, on that note, again, we have a lot of like the cult leader Will edit coming up. So Will has this idea. And his idea is that the house has been engaging in too many of the seven deadly sins. The sins that he cites are not necessarily the ones that I would have cited. What does he say? Was it greed, gluttony, and sloth? I think he might have said, where I feel like noticeably absent was lust, I thought.
Well, you know, if he included lust there, then he might have had to include himself.
Yeah. So what he says, they need to sort of atone for violating these sins. And he wants the house to get into, I've heard, a 36-hour and also a 24-hour fast. But he wants all the house guests to go on to a voluntary fast.
Yes. And he sees it as a way to control people. He says, I can be the puppeteer. They can be the marionettes. And this is one of the things, I think, one of the more infamous moves that Will makes in season two. It's something that people point to in terms of like, man, Will was such a puppet master in his season. He got all these people to do this fast. And this is one of these moments where I feel like the reality is a little lackluster compared to the myth of the fast that Will makes everybody go through. Because nobody really does it. Nobody really finishes the fast. It turns out at the end, it's just like him, Justin, and Shannon.
Shannon, right. And I'd love to get from you, was this a good idea also that Will chalks it up as a success? He says he's able to, now he knows who has willpower, who doesn't have willpower in the house. He feels like that he is able to discern a lot of information from this. But it does seem as though it is something that unites the house against him.
Yeah, and, you know, understanding who has willpower and who doesn't, it doesn't really inform a whole lot, especially considering Justin is one of the people that I guess you would say has willpower, but he's literally thrown out of the house in a few days after that. So not a lot of...
Because he can't stop threatening to kill people.
Exactly. Like, not a lot of valuable information is coming from this, and it is something that Nicole sees straight through and uses it against him to unite the house against him and stay in the house. So I think this is much more of a mistake than it is an example of Will's puppeteering ability.
Right. I don't want to fault him too much for this because, again, we haven't established what the rules are of the game. And so I feel like that I will grant Will a bit more of a learning curve in terms of this season. Like, I'm more concerned with what he's doing in the second half of the game, where he sort of can have the chances to see, oh, when I do this, this happens. And when I do this, this happens. You know, I feel like that he does not necessarily know how the controls of the car work.
Yeah. Right now, at least from my perspective, it seems like Will is trying to have fun. He's trying to make good TV, and he wants to be this character, and he's doing things to play up this character, and he's still learning the ropes of you know, how this affects his actual game. He feels a little bit untouchable because he thinks this plan is foolproof, and he thinks that he hasn't really faced the adversity yet that he ultimately will, and that I think that's like a trial by fire that really shapes the way that he looks at the game.
All right, so a video camera is brought into the house, Taryn, and another task is given to the house guests where they have to make a short film which will be shown to them, and they don't really get any other ground rules. And I guess predictably, Mike, Boogie, and Will really take over and are not really facilitating a lot of input from the other house guests.
Yeah, this is their thing. And I mean, I think understandably so. I think it turned out like what they showed on the show was pretty funny, the different setups that they had, especially given that, you know, they're obviously amateurs.
Right.
So I think that they probably felt like, yeah, this is great. We're going to make something really funny. We have like, we're really funny. You know, Mike in particular, he really, like I said, he understands what people want from him in terms of entertainment. So I think it felt like a no-brainer to them, but they weren't really thinking about how it would come off to the other house guests. And Bunky in particular was very annoyed because he had a lot of ideas that they said were terrible and didn't want to use. And
which I believe them.
They
say that Bunky's ideas were terrible. I bet they probably were. I'm sure Kent's ideas were really terrible. Also, I'm sure Justin had terrible ideas. But that being said, that they really did a bad job of including all the other house guests. And also, Mike Boogie was actually very good in the video also.
Yeah, exactly. I thought a lot of those segments were really funny. And of course, Hardy is like taking up for Bunky. Like, oh, it's mean what they did to Bunky and like not letting him speak up and have his ideas.
Yeah, Hardy has such a hero complex. Like, he always has to be the person who's like the defender of the people that have had an injustice against them.
Yes, the defender of the real people.
Yes, yes. Okay. The video ends with sort of like a bunch of guys in the hot tub with Sherry.
Yeah. Mike is like, you know, Cheryl, she's just like a mom to everyone and you know, all this stuff. And then they you know, zoom in on her and she's surrounded by four dudes like, oh, yeah, more.
Yeah. And then they eventually get a chance to watch the video. But this was another real who cares moment for me in this rewatch.
Very much so.
Okay. More Shannon and Dr. Will flirting. And, you know, there's like a lot of like Shannon talks about like, you know, I think we're just friends. And then like cutting to like them like making out.
Yeah. And this is where Will says he considers her a sister, a hot sister he's trying to hook up with, but a sister nonetheless.
Yeah. They're talking about the idea of getting wrinkles. Dr. Will does call his shot here and says that he is going to get Botox one day.
Yeah. I noticed that. I was like, man, yeah, you really you knew what you wanted out of life.
Look, Taryn, the guy, when you set a goal that you put it out there, you write it on your dream board, you make that happen.
Yeah. I mean, clearly Ashley from Big Brother 14 was inspired.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Will again is talking to her about, well, whatever. You know, it's hard to follow these conversations of what was said and what wasn't said. But there's a really great moment where Will is in the diary room, which sort of illustrates what I was talking about in the open of this, where he's like telling us in the diary room, like, hey, look, the cuddling is solely for warmth. And he sort of like holds the thought and like has like a wry smile and like a little bit of an eyebrow raise. And there's nobody else in this show that's doing stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. He knows exactly how to play this and how to come off just so like you see him do it to Shannon. And it seems very obvious when he's doing it to Shannon. And then he does it to you. He does it to the viewer and it works. It's so charming in that moment.
Yeah. And Dr. Will is really twofold with this because he is in the house and later on his strategy will be, hey, I'm lying to everybody else, but I'm telling you the truth. I'm being honest with you about my lying to them. And then in the diary room, it's the same exact thing where he's telling us, hey, I'm lying to all of them, but I'm telling you people at home, the truth.
Yeah, that's something that Will really understood more than anyone else was that the audience was like a player in the game. And he really played the audience in that way. And he knew exactly how to do it, which I think is one of the more impressive aspects of his game.
So we go back to Bunky and Kent. And we have, again, this really great conversation, which is going to unfold. And again, we have sort of a reset of the Kent saying about how sickos, weirdos, and freaks. Now it's all alternative lifestyles. And so Bunky is asked by Kent if he is gay. And he says that he is.
Yes. And of course, the first reaction again is Kent is saying, why didn't you correct people when they asked what your wife's name was?
Yeah.
And Bunky has to sort of defend himself there. But it does eventually come around to this conversation where Kent is asking a lot of questions and trying to understand Bunky, because I'm sure this is something that Kent has never experienced before. And he's getting a lot of these questions answered. And Bunky's talking about how he desperately didn't want to be gay when he was a kid, and he just wanted it to go away, and he didn't want this to be who he was. And especially, and like, not that he's ashamed of being gay himself, but he didn't want to be gay in the society he currently was, given the current attitude of the country. And that's when we get the moment where Kent says, like, he really admires the courage it takes for Bunky to just be Bunky in this world. And like I said, like, this is kind of an ugly moment, because there's a lot of ugliness to it, but it's also kind of a great moment for television, for society, especially at the time. I'm sure it really helped bring a conversation to people, and, you know, maybe was one of the things that contributed toward where we are today, where we would look at this conversation and think it's ridiculous. Like, nobody would ever have that. I mean, obviously there's still people that do, but this is not commonplace anymore that somebody would have this sort of opinion and it be recognized as a normal thing.
Yeah, I thought that the whole thing was really, really powerful, and what a turnaround it was from Kent, because he ends up coming to him and saying, like, I really appreciate, like, how much courage it took for you to be the person that you are. And the part for me that was the most powerful was Bunky talking about saying to Kent, do you think I wanted this? Do you think I chose to be gay? That I was, you know, from when I was little, like, I wanted to take a guy to the prom, and he would pray to God that he would end up being straight. And he said, if I don't wake up straight, I don't know if I want to wake up. And again, that was a really amazing thing to hear. And I, you know, I'm reminded of the conversation from Survivor that we ended up having back in Millennials versus Gen X, where we had when Zeke was out on the reward with Brett and talking about how, you know, Brett, it just wasn't a thing for Brett at his age to, you know, to announce that you were coming out, where a younger person doesn't necessarily have to go through that. And then Bunky is like, you know, even a person who is a few years older than Brett is, to have, you know, go through these feelings of that he is, you know, practically suicidal, coming to terms with who he is as a person. It is just really amazing. It was amazing then, but again, it's amazing sort of like to go through this prism of, here's this conversation from 16 years ago, which probably still rings very true.
Yeah, it strikes me as strange that it was only 16 years ago that this conversation was even happening. But it really does. I think, like, something that has been researched is that when you try to change people's minds, it's very difficult. But when they're confronted with somebody who is standing right in front of them and having a conversation with them, and they get the chance to, like, have an actual conversation where they ask questions, that is when you get real change in people's opinions. And this is clearly something that happened to Kent, like, staring Bunky in the face. He's having this conversation. He's really starting to understand, and it's really connecting with him, not only on an intellectual level, but on an emotional level. This is an actual person that I'm talking to, and my actions are contributing toward that feeling that he had, where, like, he didn't want to wake up if he wasn't gay. And, like, that's directly coming from where I'm, that, like, that's something that I'm putting into this society. And I think, again, like, the fact that this was on TV and broadcast to so many people is something that I do think contributed toward bringing that conversation into the light and allowing more people to have it. And I think that's really a great thing. And, you know, I don't think there's a lot of great things that reality TV brings to society, but this is potentially one of them.
Right. And this is probably the kind of thing when they brought Arnold Shapiro in to be a part of this season, you know, with his background in documentary. I think that they were, you know, hoping for, you know, impactful moments like this, and certainly delivers in a way that I'm not sure that the modern day show would have the gravitas to be able to tackle.
Yeah, definitely not. I think this is something that they would try to shy away from nowadays.
Okay. So, Taryn, we go back to the fast with Dr. Will. Autumn only lasted 3 hours on the fast. Only three people completed it. And Dr. Will is talking about his big takeaways, which we discussed. But somehow, this fast really must not have gone well, considering that the house is now out of food.
Yeah, they immediately go into talking about how there's no food. And I mean, I guess since nobody finished the fast, maybe they overcompensated when they started eating again.
Right. Okay. So they all were starving. They ate all the food. We have another food competition here. And really, these are not landing for me, no. To be honest.
They're so bad.
And so just to yada yada what they have to do, it's that the house guests have to spell out a word with their bodies, and then Mike Boogie is going to sit up on like a lifeguard chair, and then he has to read out the word that they're spelling, and then if that's the case, the house will win a dinner with all of the trimmings.
Yeah, they spend so much time on, like, will Boogie read the word or will he not read the word? He was thinking about saying fillet a fish, but is he going to say that or will that not count? We're not sure. Will he just say fillet or will he finally say fillet mignon? Like, it was just, like, so much time for, like, it was bad.
Right. So they spell out the word filet. Mike Boogie guesses it. Filet mignon dinner is on. Everybody is very excited, except for Nicole, who's a vegetarian, but she will get a lot of the side dishes.
Yes. Just another thing that separates her from the group that she has to sort of like shove down as part of her own personality and try to fit in with other people. But I think it's telling that she recognizes that and is trying very hard to say, like, don't worry about me, guys. You know, do whatever you want.
Okay, so we see a conversation with Nicole and Kent where Nicole has converted Kent into one of her evangelists. So Kent is going to be pushing people to keep Nicole in the house. We see Kent with Monica saying Cheryl is a much bigger threat.
Yes, and Monica's reaction is so funny. She's just like, oh man, like this is ridiculous. Like, I don't even remember what she said.
Yeah, I think that her quote was,
yeah. It's just like such a weird reaction. And it obviously doesn't land because Monica ends up voting Nicole out. But
she's like, oh, yeah. I'm about to vote for the wrong side.
Yeah. Monica's edit is just so strange.
Yeah. Okay. Kent tells Monica that Nicole will never nominate you. Is that true?
I think Nicole will nominate anyone.
All right. So we go to dinner and now we start to explore the Justin character for a bit here in a couple of odd sequences. So they say Grace and Justin was going to say Grace and nobody knows if he's ever serious or joking. So like, that's part of his character. We don't know. He has a sick sense of humor, I guess.
Yeah, this I hate this thing that people do where you never know when they're joking. Like, is this person making fun of me or are they actually coming at me right now or are they joking? Or it's like, are they joking that they're upset right now or are they totally fine? And then, or like, are they joking that they're going to hit me in the face or is that just part of their personality? Like, it's the most obnoxious thing in the world. And, you know, Justin is basically saying, oh, it's part of my strategy. I'm just getting in their heads, which is just, it's so obviously not, like, it's just who he is to just be annoying to people and just try to like pull this sort of like alpha male like dominance over them where you put people in this state of unease where like they can't completely defend themselves because you just pass it off as, oh, I was just joking, but they're also like feeling threatened by you. So it's so obnoxious, and I completely understand, like, I could completely put myself in Kent's position here, which is like, God, that's so annoying.
Well, before we get to Kent, we have an issue with Bunky where Bunky, for some reason, while he's like lifting weights with Justin, like whacks him on the head.
Yeah.
And Justin tells him like, hey, if you whack me on the head, I'm going to punch you.
Yeah.
Like, if you touch my head, I'm going to punch you. And I'm not joking.
And then that's exactly the kind of thing. It's just like, okay, is that supposed to be funny? Like, how am I supposed to react to this right now? And it's basically just Justin just gets to lay into Bunky and Bunky just has to take it. And it obviously makes Bunky feel very uncomfortable, and it's very uncomfortable to watch.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about Pillowgate. So that Kent has the HOH room and Justin apparently needs a pillow. So he goes into the HOH room and he takes a pillow, but it seems as though the pillow that he took was Kent's personal pillow from home. Taryn, do you have a personal pillow?
Oh, I have many personal pillows.
Many personal pillows.
Yeah, I'm all about Kent, the personal pillow.
Kent brought a pillow into the Big Brother house?
That is something I thought of. Like, did he get to bring a pillow? Because I don't think that's a thing nowadays.
I don't remember him carrying a pillow walking into the house.
Maybe he had it in his suitcase. Who knows?
That would take up a lot of space in the suitcase, no?
It's very important to him that he has his own personal pillow, Rob.
Okay. Do the Big Brother house guests have more luggage than we see them go into the house with?
I think they do. I think the luggage they have is more of a symbol of, like, it's more there for decoration. I do believe that there are further things that production is in control of that they can sometimes release to the house guests on occasion.
Okay, so maybe that's where Kent's personal pillow came from.
Perhaps.
And so Kent went and got the pillow back from Justin, and then Kent is then confronted by Justin, who basically wants to fight Kent over the pillow.
Yeah, he says, this is only the first time I've done this. And Kent says it's the second time, and Justin's going to fight over that point. And Kent has a great quote in the diary room where he's like, I feel like this is a prison mentality, and I feel like Justin is trying to make me his, quote, bitch.
Yes, and doing a good job of it.
You're doing a very good job of it. Kent, they get in each other's faces. Kent is flinching a little bit. He says he really feels like Justin tried to humiliate him in front of other people. And this is a very very tense moment. This is one of the more tense moments I think we've seen on all of Big Brother.
Right, and I think we get the sense that Justin is going to be read the riot act for this by production. And I think that this was probably the last straw, which was crossed when we get to the opening of the next episode. And Justin has been expelled from the house.
Yeah. And we see a clip there where he's basically saying, like, I understand I shouldn't have done that. Like, you can tell that came right after this. And this is the one that they decided to really highlight for the show to explain to people, this is how Justin is.
And just in the real time of this, and we'll get into it more in a couple of minutes, but this was back to the Tuesday night episode. The events which are going to get Justin expelled are going to be taking place Tuesday night. So I don't know necessarily if they would have edited this any differently if they would have known like where it was ultimately leading.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny because they ended up replaying a lot of what they showed in this episode, but with a slightly different tone, because in this episode, they've got Justin in the diary room saying, this is part of my game. I'm just getting in people's heads. There is some level of like ambiguity in terms of is Justin out of control or is this part of his game? And I can see that that's probably where they're going in terms of the story. But then when the future events happen, they say, OK, going back, we're going to show this in the light that we saw it as, which was, oh, my God, this is scary and we might need to eliminate him from the game.
Okay, so we go back to Will and Shannon, and they're in the hammock. Dr. Will is saying to Shannon, can I give you a kiss on this cheek? He says that 500,000 14-year-old girls are saying to do it. He's probably not wrong.
No, I don't think he was.
Yeah. And then we get them ultimately kissing in the storage room. And again, this is another alcohol-fueled conversation. He's saying that alcohol is truth serum. And eventually they end up in bed and we see Will in the diary room saying to Shannon's boyfriend at home, he's out of here. It's over for him.
He's completely done with. It's probably one of the harshest things anybody has ever said,
right,
of somebody outside of the house.
Yeah. You don't see a lot of the taunting of the other person in the relationship too much. You see cheating, certainly, still on Big Brother, but not so much taunting the person in the relationship.
Yeah. Will really feels like, man, I got you. I beat you. I got Shannon and sucks for you, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. We see a little bit about the vote count going on. Will says that there's no way in the world Nicole would stay. He is scared of Nicole, though.
Yes, he said he'll be glad to see her go because she really scares him, and for good reason.
Yeah, Mike says that there's a zero threat posed by Nicole this week. And Nicole is telling us how she thinks she has Autumn and Bunky.
Yes, she says the dynamic of the house is completely turning around, and that's true.
Funny she doesn't mention Kent, who we saw campaigning for her in this episode.
Yeah, yeah. I think Kent was probably like more immediately somebody that she felt like she had, and whereas the other people, she feels like she's slowly starting to win over.
Right. With 12 people in the house, it would have taken 5 votes to evict. Obviously, the Justin situation is going to change that up for her, but she needs to find those 5 over the course of the week. And she certainly feels like she has 2, at least heading into the eviction night episode.
Yes.
Yes. And she teases that the house may be turning. It could be happening.
Yep. This is the start of the big divide with the 2 factions.
It could be happening. All right. Taryn, let's get into the first eviction night of Big Brother 2.
All right, let's do it.
So, Taryn, we open up the live show with a bit of news. We have some breaking news. A
little bit of news.
Are happening now. Justin Seebeck has been expelled from the Big Brother house. Now, I can tell you from the real time of this, I remember really where I was. I was at work and, you know, I had a couple of good friends that also were very much into Big Brother 2 with me. My friend Tommy Trinchitella and my other friend Floyd. And we were all like hey, did you hear what's going on? Something went down at the Big Brother house. And the stories started to roll in basically from the updates at the time, which I think was mostly Joker's updates. And you can go on and sort of like read the accounts of this crazy party, which happened that Tuesday night. And we hear things about that they got so drunk and Justin was peeing on the house and peeing on the windows. That was a thing. And Boogie was, again, I don't want to speak out of school, but I think that that at least that there was some sort of like romantic talk between Boogie and Autumn, which I don't know exactly how that played out, but not like a great situation where there were warm feelings between the two of them after. Yeah. And then culminating in the Justin holding the knife to Krista's throat. Would you be mad if I killed you?
Yeah, yeah, that's man, it's a very it's I think this is basically like the party to end all parties in Big Brother, because there is never anything really like it again, because Big Brother shies away from giving them as much alcohol as allowed something like this to happen.
Right. And this environment that we tried to cultivate here in the first 10 days of the show, hey, this is not your boring Big Brother 2000. This is Big Brother 2. This is going to be a whole, you know, different, you know, hedonistic atmosphere. Well, sometimes you know, we got a little carried away.
Yes, I just went a little too far here. And like I said, this was one of the main sources of criticism for, like, look what they've done to this show. Look how disgusting and degenerate this show has become just to get more exciting and get more ratings. This is the kind of thing that they've stooped to.
And it became sort of like an easy thing to attack the show for of look what happens with these degenerates. And I don't think that it was necessarily too much in Big Brother 1, but I do think that there was maybe there's a lot of like harping in the media in terms of like the sort of unsavory past of some of these house guests that would get cast on these shows when they had mugshots and previous arrests. And I think that there would also be a little bit of a checkered past that will predictably start to unfold for Justin here. So this did become a major news story also in the day.
Yeah, they really didn't seem to do their due diligence with a lot of the casting these early seasons, where there's a lot of stuff that slipped through the cracks. I do think that they were aware that Justin had some previous altercations with the law. But they said, you know, those charges, I guess, had been dropped. And so they said that it was something that they considered but didn't think would be a problem.
Okay, so we open the show with Julie talking about what happened, and we get a little bit of a supercut of Justin talking about some bad stuff. He seems to be having a conversation where he repeatedly is mentioning how he's going to punch Autumn in the stomach.
Yes, like while he's having sex with her, he's going to, like from behind, he's going to punch her in the stomach. Just like very gross and graphic stuff. Like I don't understand how anybody thinks it's like okay to talk like that, or how did people listen to that and not be like, whoa dude, no.
Again, I don't know if you necessarily want to be the person who tells Justin Seebeck no.
Yeah true, very true.
Okay. So he's talking about that for a while. And you see him in the diary room sort of like parroting back something that the producers must have told him. Yep. And he's like saying in the diary room, he's like, you know, I got to hear from these people all the time. Justin, don't beat anybody up. Justin, you can't sexually force yourself on other people in the house. I know. I hear it all the time.
Yeah, the way he says it, it's just like, It's so ridiculous.
Matter
like,
of fact.
Yeah, like, oh man, it's every time I get called in here, it's like, oh God. It's like, yeah, obviously. Like, what are you talking about? Like, he's so oblivious to this. And I think this is one of the biggest reasons as to why he got kicked off the show, is that he just genuinely couldn't understand that what he did was wrong.
Right. And I feel like that we buried the lead a little bit here with the, Justin, you can't sexually force yourself on somebody in the house. Like the fact that he had to be reprimanded
right.
for that.
Like he talked about that. He talked about doing stuff like that. And it's just like, how, like you can't talk about it. Like you can't just say you're going to do stuff like that. Like that's not okay.
Yeah. So we get to the ill-fated night and we see Krista and Justin, and she's like laying on the countertop. And first he like gets out like some sort of like handheld like a vacuum that's like a non-electrical thing.
Yeah. I tried to describe it too. I was like, what is this?
Yeah. It's sort of like that you would have like in a restaurant that doesn't make any noise. And he sort of like cues it up like he's going to bash her over the head with it. And he says, would you get mad if I cracked you over the head with this? She's like, no. I mean, man, Krista doesn't get mad about anything.
No, clearly not. And I'm very sad that that Justin is going to be leaving so soon, because I'm falling in love with this impression already.
Well, we still have this interview with Julie Chen.
Okay.
And then he finally says, would you get mad if I killed you? Like, what? What?
Probably.
Excuse me? Yeah, seriously, would you get mad if I killed you? Like, what? What kind of question is this?
Where does this even come from? Like, he acts like, oh, obviously, we were just joking around. You know, I was seducing her. She was into it. Like, into what? What is it? Well, I don't understand what this is. Like, where does this come from?
I don't know. I don't know where it was going. And they don't show the scene on the show. But, right. I mean, Krista, I don't want to say in fairness to Justin, but she does not seem to be offended in any way about what's going on.
No, not at all. It's funny because it's like they showed the part with the vacuum Swiffer thing, but then they cut away and then Julie just kind of describes it instead to us, which I thought was kind of funny. Actually, it's like it's weird to hear her talk about it. And she says, like, with Krista's encouragement, he put the knife back to her neck. They kissed again, and then he returned the knife to its drawer. I mean, Krista, again, not to Justin's defense, but she was into it at the time.
Yeah. And on top of that, when Cheryl gets evicted, Krista says to Cheryl, like, tell Justin I said hi.
Yeah.
What?
Well, I think she later claims that she had no memory of it. And so So that's why we'll later see that there was a lot of people, Chilltown in particular, that were upset that he left. They didn't know what happened. They didn't realize that Justin had held a knife to her neck because she didn't tell anyone. And that's why they're so like, we don't have any closure here. Who knows whether or not she actually remembered it, but she claimed that she didn't.
Right. So this is going to really set off a chain of events that are going to be felt for years to come. I have been reading on Reality Blurred. Andy Denhart has been blogging really since the get-go on this. And if you look at his Big Brother 2 archives, there's a lot of like news articles that he published. So on July 13, 2001, he published a post about how Arnold Shapiro says alcohol might be the next thing kicked out of the house.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yep,
I think that was probably pretty accurate. I also liked as Justin is called to the diary room after the knife to the neck thing, he's like, oh boy, we got problems. Yeah. I think it might have been that knife to your neck.
Yeah. So maybe. He ends up going into the diary room and then is never seen again in the Big Brother house.
Yes. Julie says, after a consultation with the psychologist, they had no choice but to expel Justin from the house.
All right. So we'll get Justin's side of the story later on in the episode. But we go to the next day and we get an announcement. And this is Arnold Shapiro over the loudspeaker basically saying like, now he clearly understood the rule because we had him repeat it back to us. Yeah,
they really do a lot of like defending this decision, which I thought is interesting because it seems like it defends it's like obviously they would need to kick him out, but they really do a lot to like show the audience and the house guests like we did everything we could and we had no other choice.
I really think that the media was going after them and not first asking, do you mind if we killed you in the paper?
Yeah.
They were really getting some bad publicity for this, but maybe it ends up being something that brought some attention to the show.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I was looking at some of the early ratings, and I think that this eviction episode was one of the high points for them in the beginning of the season.
Which really sort of overshadows what is going to be a very compelling eviction going on here in just a little bit. But we get reactions from the house guests. You know, you see people like Boogie crying in the diary room about how there was no closure here.
Yep. Boogie wants the closure. He wants to know. I mean, he didn't know what happened. So you can kind of understand where he's coming from. And they didn't really tell us that they didn't know what had happened. So it kind of comes off as like, man, like, why? What do you need closure? Like, obviously, he should have been kicked out. But again, like, since he didn't know the extent to which Justin had really broken the rules, you can kind of understand why he'd be a little upset here.
We see Bunky also crying that he feels like he blames himself, that he could have been a positive influence on him, unlike Will and Boogie, who were negative influences and brought out the worst in him.
Yeah, he said, I just feel like Justin committed suicide and I tried to help him and I couldn't, which
right.
Very strange way of looking at it. And yeah, I mean, the Chilltown faction here, Will, Boogie and Shannon, they really get the brunt of the blame here. The people are really taking up for Justin, feeling like Justin was this malleable dude. And it's because of Will and Mike and their influence on him that he acted poorly, which I don't think is the case at all.
Right. But Mike and Will probably were leading the charge of, okay, party, let's have this party, let's have this party. And Justin is unable to control himself in that environment. And I think that they looked at him as sort of just like this wacky guy who was not a dangerous person as we see in the house. And I really feel like that they end up taking the brunt of the blame on this like crazy party where Justin is peeing on the house and you know, Mike Boogie is really making Autumn upset. And ultimately, Justin is evicted from the house. I think that this is just a bad look for the Chilltown side of things. And it's funny that we see like Will and Boogie like trying to like gather up his stuff, Justin's stuff with Shannon. And they find like his license. But I guess his license is only for boats.
Yeah.
this is for boat operation only. And they're sort of like laughing about it. And, you know, because they're somewhat like lighthearted, the other rest of the house is like at like a funeral. And yeah. They're like, I can't believe they're not taking this seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's that really segues well into the next segment of talking about the two different factions of the house.
Right. And everything is just going really sour for the Chilltown side of things, because Nicole is able to frame this argument as you have the cool people and you have the real people.
Yep. Yep. And I think it was Kent who said the real people too in the diary room, where he's talking about like Hardy and Monica and Autumn. They're real people, as opposed to, you know, the cool kids, the chill town. They called them this is something I didn't really remember, but it was, you know, Will and Mike called themselves Chilltown, but the rest of the people called them the Brat Pack.
The Brat Pack.
Yes. And so it was the Brat Pack versus the real people. And it was a house divided.
Yeah. And while it wouldn't have mattered, ultimately, losing Justin is an important number from that side of the house, where I think that they looked at that as, you know, another vote that was going to be sending Nicole out on Thursday. And I guess they thought they had Monica and Krista as well. So I think that they thought that they were still doing pretty good. But now, instead of being like a two vote majority, it was going to be just the one razor thin majority in the vote.
Yes, and they really they just really didn't recognize how much the house had shifted. Will is talking about, like, he still feels really confident that Nicole is gone. He's saying Nicole is like garbage on Thursday, she's out. And they haven't recognized that everybody has changed their mind on where things stand, and they have really been rubbing people the wrong way. They've really just been in their own world and trying to hang out with each other and have fun and make good TV. And they haven't realized that the rest of the house has basically just formed this coalition against them.
We also see a little bit of Shannon behaving badly, where she's like trying to convince Autumn to stick with them. And then we see Shannon get into like a shouting match with Autumn and tells her she should get her a bag of chips.
Yeah. I guess Shannon, they were supposed to like give up smoking for a basketball or something. Mm-hmm. And Autumn just immediately, like, Autumn, of course it's Autumn again.
Yeah. Just, no willpower.
Like, yeah. No willpower. Just goes and smokes immediately. And this pisses Shannon off, and they get into this shouting match. So, I mean, this is the first of many with Shannon.
So let's get to our first house guests voting, Taryn. We see Will and Shannon cast the first votes in the history of Big Brother as we mm-hmm. know it. And Will and Shannon both vote to evict Nicole.
Yeah, and this is something that they do much differently in these earlier seasons than they do now, where we have the live voting, we have the house guests come in one by one. They would have these edited diary room segments where they'd talk about the pros and cons of evicting each person and why they're evicting each person. And then at the end of the edited segment, they would say, I vote to evict so-and-so. And these votes would be locked in ahead of time before the actual eviction. And yeah, we do get Will saying, Nicole tried to ostracize me and tried to make me out to be the one thing. I didn't want to be categorized as the bookworm, the nerd. And I think I don't know how real that is coming from Will, given that he's, you know, that's not anywhere near his image. But I do think it might be something that informs us about who Will is as a person, because he really does try very hard to be seen as like this very charismatic and controlling and like, you know, cocky and versus confident kind of guy. He really does stray away from this nerdy side, but there's definitely a nerdy side there. And I think that's what people like you and me, like, were able to relate to him, because he does have this side of him that is more that is into a show like Big Brother, where he's trying to manipulate these people. And he, you know, as much as he talks about being above the show, I think he really loves it deep down. But I think those two parts of him are in conflict, maybe.
Yeah, I did pick up on that also, the fact that he says, you know, she tried to do to me, she tried to brand me with the one thing that I really didn't want, which was to be branded as the nerd. When she makes a comment like, what are you, Doogie Howser? It seems like that's something that he really does not like. And I feel like that he doesn't give us that a lot in the diary room of, here's something that really bothers me when people do this, and not like in a like facetious, joking way.
Yeah, exactly. It felt to me like a rare, genuine moment from Will in the diary room.
Okay, so Julie is going to check in with the house guests. She asks Hardy about adapting, that he says almost nothing. Will, how do you feel like they're coming together in the house? You know, yada, yada, yada. We comment on Mike Boogie's sort of weird hair. How would you describe this?
It's kind of like, I mean, I guess nobody's going to get this reference, but like in Star Wars, there are characters with like spiky heads.
Yeah. Like very it's like, punk.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very like, this is early 2000s. This is like late 90s, I guess. So a bit off even in its time, I think.
Right. Why is Bunky wearing sunglasses in this moment?
Who knows? Maybe this is a holdover,
I think, from Big Brother 1, where, hey, it's eviction night, let's dress wacky.
Yeah, I guess so.
I feel like this doesn't happen as much in modern day Big Brother.
Oh, no. Eviction day is all about dressing up as nice as possible now. Yeah. They want to look their best.
Now, it's like the Chicken George of it is run its course of let me dress up in I'll put on a woman's dress or something like that, because we're going to be on TV today.
Yeah, exactly. It's we're going to be on TV, so I want to make sure I look my best, not like they stick to the funny costumes and dressing up in women's bathing suits for the regular stuff.
Okay. And we start to get into how has life changed since the nominations, and it's different. So this is interesting to me, Taryn. So Julie is going to give both Cheryl and Nicole a chance to talk to the house. She asks Nicole to go first. Nicole defers. She says, I don't want to go first. Can you come back to me? And then she goes to Cheryl, who then asks Julie to repeat the question. And she says there's been a lot of turbulence and differences of opinions. But then we go back to Nicole, and Nicole goes like full on waterworks about how she's starting to cry. Was this planned? And if so, why?
It seemed very planned. And it came off very awkward because, you know, it's live. And this is like the first time, and it's strange that Julie acquiesces to Nicole's request and like doesn't say, no, I asked you, you have to answer. It goes to Cheryl, and then Cheryl doesn't know what she's saying. And it when it comes back to Nicole, it really does come off as disingenuous to me, that like she's immediately into like being choked up. It seems like she was preparing herself for this speech while buying time by forcing Cheryl to go first.
Yeah. So I don't know. It wouldn't have done anything. The votes are already cast, but maybe Nicole was just looking to garner some sympathy from the audience there. And maybe, you know, Nicole is going to cry a lot this season. Maybe she really was having a weak moment in that spot. We're going to then check in with Nicole's husband and also with Cheryl's son on the first live eviction of BB2. Nothing really of note other than Cheryl's son gets to comment on Dr. Will saying his mom is hot.
Yeah, that's basically the highlight of the segment.
Yeah. And then we get to see Hardy and Monica are going to vote to evict Cheryl. So 2-2 on the votes as far as we know.
Yeah, and this is the first time we see how Hardy votes is he says, I vote to evict Cheryl. Unfortunately, which is kind of like the precursor to I sadly vote to evict.
Yes, yes. Very good. We get to see a little bit of a flashback to Mike and Nicole arguing. Nicole is trying to tell Mike she knows about his alliance.
Yes. She basically calls Chilltown out, and Boogie tries to deny that it's a thing, that he's not in an alliance. And this is again a moment where they kind of then quickly cut to Boogie talking with his alliance members about, we really need to make sure Nicole leaves, to really like discredit what he's saying.
Right. Like the vibe here going on is the plan backfiring, really starting to reinforce that Mike and Will's plan could be in trouble. So Mike talks about how since he nominated Cheryl, his relationship with her is stronger. And we cut to Cheryl talking about how she's really mad. Yeah. And Nicole and Cheryl make a deal. Whoever stays in has to take down Chilltown, which I think speaks to that maybe Cheryl might have been a good player if she stayed in because of the fact that Boogie and Will really get no sort of sense that she's pissed with them.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, but I would have liked to have seen that, like, the fact that Cheryl wasn't in Chilltown's pocket really speaks to, I think, her inability to sell that to the other players, because when she is also somebody that's going after them, there's not a lot of difference between Cheryl and Nicole in terms of who's going to go after them. At this point, the house guests are not aware of the fact that Nicole turns out to be a great challenge competitor. So it's not like they're necessarily thinking in those terms. It's really just that despite the fact that everybody loved Cheryl, I think Nicole made stronger bonds and was able to appeal to their strategic mind as well. Whereas Cheryl ultimately just kind of let things happen the way that they did and let her feelings about Chilltown and her plans in the future just kind of sit there and not really do anything with them.
Yeah, why make that pact with Nicole? I mean, from Nicole's perspective, I guess it makes some sense to make that deal with Cheryl, because if you can get Cheryl on your side, Cheryl's not going to be out there campaigning against you too hard. And I think that the thing that we could fault Cheryl for the most, there seems to be absolutely no campaign whatsoever mounted by Cheryl. She sort of just took the guys at their word. Oh, you're safe. Don't worry about it. On the show, we never see her having these conversations with Kent, with Hardy, with Autumn, like trying to shore up the votes.
Yeah, and she eventually tells Julie that she's fine with leaving because she liked the fact that it was bad for the Brat Pack. She was like, yeah, I agree with their decision because I wanted to strike against them too. Like, she allowed herself to be the bullet that people were shooting at Chilltown.
Right. So if she could have, like, gotten that word out to Kent and to some of the other people that were very much anti-Chilltown at that point, I think that certainly would have helped her case. So we get to our first ever interview with the HOH, which we don't do anymore in modern day Big Brother. But Julie is talking with Mike Boogie and reassures him that, hey, nobody can hear what you have to say.
Yes, very important that that she does this as Big Brother Canada house guest. We'll find out
someday.
Yes, someday. And he's got this like funny position in the chair where like his legs are outstretched on like the leg rest, and he's just kind of like the chair is kind of like eating him up. It's a very awkward position.
So speaking of awkward positions, Boogie really does not have a great read of the landscape right now, because that he's pretty confident that Nicole's going home. It will be a close vote, but he is sort of resting assured on the fact that in these eight votes, worst case scenario, it's a 4-4 tie. He might have to break a tie on this first vote.
Yeah, I think he feels very confident that he has Krista's vote. He talks about how he feels like he's bonded with Krista over Justin leaving, and he doesn't really recognize that Krista's very annoyed with Will, and we learned that earlier in the episode, where Krista really feels very anti-Will, and I think that's a large reason why she voted the way that she did. And I think he's blind to that, and I think he feels like, he talks about, like, this is definitely a lot closer than I thought it would be, but I'm still going to be able to break a tie, so I'm pretty sure Nicole is still going to leave, and if she stays, I'm in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, he says he'll be a marked man. He also says that he doesn't think that Cheryl is looking for any payback. She's cool with it, and obviously we know that that's not true as well.
Yeah, yep.
So we will end up seeing Kent and Autumn's vote. They both vote to evict Cheryl, so it's 4-2, as we know. So we come back. We don't see the last two votes given to us. We end up with Julie revealing that Cheryl is evicted 5-3 in our first live vote of Big Brother 2. And live vote as in Julie reads it live. They did not vote on the live show.
Yes, red live. Right. And Boogie looks stunned. He looks very shocked. This is our first blindside of Big Brother, and Boogie has a great face for it.
Taryn, the eviction is kind of a mess production wise. I mean, this takes like I don't know if you ran a stopwatch. I feel like it's got to be somewhere between like 2 to 2.5 minutes for Cheryl to get out of the house.
Yeah, and then they lingered on the house for far too long. The house guests were talking about production, like, what should we be doing right now? You know, we're only halfway into an hour-long show, so they're probably going to be talking with Cheryl as we speak. And like, nope, they haven't cut away to that yet. So it was very awkward.
Right. Boogie felt really bad. He's trying to comfort Cheryl on the way out the door. Cheryl is also carrying a watermelon, unexplained.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, she leaves the house carrying a watermelon. It seems to have a face drawn on it.
You know, people are very drawn to arts and crafts, and
that was a souvenir she wanted.
Yeah, you got to come away from the Big Brother house with something, and if that something is a watermelon with a face on it, then I guess that's what you get.
Okay, Krista also tells her, say hi to Justin for me.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So we see Julie back with Cheryl outside of the house. She says she's fine. It was all up in the air. She knew she was in danger the whole time. I didn't really get that sense.
Yeah, I mean, again, like people always talk about, I knew it was coming, you know, and I know who, it was funny because Julie asked her, like, do you know who the votes were? And she was like, oh, of course. And she's like, who are the votes? She was like, can't think about it right
now. In fairness, a lot's going on.
Yeah.
She does finally say everybody except Monica, Shannon, and Will. This feels like a new segment in the, or an old segment that I've forgotten about, where then Julie will then play a video. Instead of a goodbye message, she will show everybody in the house saying who they voted for.
Yeah, which is a very strange choice, given that there's really no other explanation for most of them. It's mostly just, I vote to evict Cheryl. I vote to evict Nicole. It's just like, yeah. Okay. And we've already seen this too, so I wasn't sure quite what the point was.
Well, we end up with Bunky saying, like, it wasn't you. It wasn't because of you.
Yeah, that's about the most explanation we get.
Yeah, it was to punish the other people. A tale literally as old as Big Brother time in terms of how this game has gone since the switch over from the original format. Pawns do go home in this game, and people will try to punish the first HOH. So we end this part with a little bit of turning the conversation back to Justin. Cheryl says she thinks that Justin is a good kid. He's a follower. But those guys in the house, they brought out the worst in him.
Oh, yes. Chilltown. Man, Chilltown really, they really corrupted poor innocent Justin, who, man, he really wouldn't have been doing any of that stuff if it wasn't for Chilltown's influence.
So Julie reunites Cheryl with her son, who had to go into a lot of therapy after hearing all the things Dr. Will had to say about his mom. And then Julie teases that now let's also check back in an interview with Justin. Now, I couldn't believe that they didn't have Justin Siebeck in some sort of Hannibal Lecter type like face mask and like straitjacket to sit across from Julie Chen.
Yeah, that now that you mention it, it is a little strange, especially given his tone throughout the interview.
Yeah, at the very least, I would have liked to have seen him on the other side of some sort of plexiglass like jail cell with like a phone talking to Julie Chen.
Quid pro quo, Julie. Quid pro quo.
I was very concerned for Julie's well-being throughout this whole interview. He also, speaking of, you said Mike Boogie looked rather uncomfortable in the chair. Justin Siebeck in this exclusive interview is at like a 45-degree angle. And he's also like, his hair is like really like gelled up, not unlike Mike Boogie at the live eviction. And then he is wearing a gigantic crucifix on a shirt with like more than half the buttons open.
He's got a particular look, and hopefully Julie had like a panic button just in case, like what, right. Big red button that she could press under the chair.
Yeah, that you hope that like somebody was standing nearby with like a cattle prod. If Justin snapped, if he decided that Julie needed a punch in the stomach, somebody would have been there to step in.
So somebody standing by to be like, we would be mad if you killed her. We would.
Yes, we would be mad. Repeat that back to us. Yeah. Okay, all right. I won't be able to kill her. I won't be able to go. Yeah. All right. So they asked him about how... Do you see why you were evicted from the house? Do you see why they made you leave?
And no way.
He's like really indignant about the whole thing. He ends up saying like, I can't even fathom how somebody could watch me kiss a girl and then I hold up a knife and I'm kissing her and she likes it. Why would you even think that? Could you please explain this to me?
Yeah. He says, if you see that as a threat, then you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You're an idiot.
You're an idiot. I can't even fathom. Yeah.
So. Julie's just like you really can't see this.
Yeah. He thinks he should still be in there.
Yeah. And Justin is legit, like, to Julie saying like, I want you to explain it to me because I can't see it. I want you to explain it to me.
I can't even understand it. He's very upset. And Julie like turns it back to the whole situation with Kent. And she does a good job of like setting up a straw man where she's sort of like, you know, there are some people who say that it was a threat of violence to Kent. And he explains it all as people don't understand my game. Okay. I was trying to intimidate people. I get in your head. If you're going to call me a liar, I'm going to get in your head. I'm joking.
Yeah. I mean, that's his defense. It works for him.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, it all ties together in one sort of unified theory of Justin. He just like goes around telling people like, if you don't do X, I'm going to kill you. And then afterwards, I was just joking.
Yeah. It's foolproof, Rob.
Right. It
clearly worked for him his whole life.
So he is a legend, indeed, the Justin Seebeck.
Yes, legendary.
Yeah. So two major historical events going on in one fourth night of Big Brother 2.
Yes, and we even have to push the HOH competition out of the episode. What would have been our first eviction / HOH episode, we get the first taste of, you'll have to wait until Saturday to to see who wins HOH.
But Taryn, for our purposes, this is a good stopping point for the end of our first part of our Big Brother 2 blockumentary. Of course, the first of five parts to go all the way through. So our five-part series will continue into part two, and that will be in the full audiobook version of this. If you want to continue listening along, that would be in part two where we discuss through the ouster of Mike Boogie in the rise and fall of Chilltown. Although the rise mostly happened in this part, Taryn.
Yes, it's a lot of fallout from the end of this episode where Nicole is talking about, oh, sweet revenge, they're going down. We will see that. We will get to see all of that happen.
Okay. In part three, we'll talk about weeks 5, 6, and 7 in the house. In part four, we'll talk about weeks 8 and 9. And then in part 10, we will discuss everything about the final three. And of course, how 9/11 impacted Big Brother 2. So a lot of different things to discuss as we go through a really historic season of television, Taryn.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I've really enjoyed this, and I'm really, really excited to dig into Will's game even more, especially once we get to the latter half. Once Chilltown has been fully defeated and he rises from the ashes and really get to like see what he does and the impact of all of that. And as you mentioned, 9/11 happens. There's so much that happens in this season, and it sets up so much for the future of Big Brother. I'm just so happy that I've got to do this.
So we set the table of what you're about to see, and not just the little table that the final four is going to sit on, Taryn, where the big whole 12-person table of Big Brother 2. And if you want to keep on going, here's what you need to do. You can go to robhasawebsite.com/BB2 to go to the store page to get the full audiobook version, all five chapters. Who knows how long this thing is going to go? Could be 15, 16. You hope that we can get it all in less than 20 hours, Taryn.
Hopefully. I mean, there's a lot to cover. Yeah.
There's a lot. We'll go as long as it takes. That's all going to be there at robiswebsite.com/bb2. The whole book is going to cost $5.99 for the entire audiobook. We've got a special code if you're a patron of Rob as a Podcast. Even at the $5 level, we've got a 50% off code for you if you want to get your hands on that. There's still a little bit of time until Big Brother 19 starts, just to really date where we are right now, unless you're listening to this like 5 years down the road. And you can have some Big Brother to follow until the real season starts on June 28th.
All right. Yes. You always have to have some sort of Big Brother going on in your life, or you'll end up like a miserable freak.
Yeah. Also, if you end up purchasing the audiobook, we'll have a code where you can listen to it on the Rahap app. Plus, we'll have a unique RSS feed where you can listen to the entire audiobook as a set of five podcasts for as long as it takes you to get through everything that we're going to talk about. But I'm really excited about this, Taryn. This is finally happening.
It really is. I could not be more excited.
All right. So for those of you guys who want to go ahead and check out the rest of the audiobook, and again, I mean, I think you're kind of pot committed here. I mean, what, you listen to what, three plus hours of this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sunk cost fallacy should be working in our favor here.
Yeah. And so if you're going to continue onward with us, we will see you in part two. And if you want to check out more about how to get the rest of this audiobook, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/bb2. to visit the But First, a Big Brother 2 blockumentary page in the Rob as a Podcast store. Taryn, I had so much fun talking through all of this. Can't wait to go through the rest of the season.
I'm so pumped. I'm ready. Let's do it right now.
All right. Would you be mad if we went on to part two?
I'd be so mad if we didn't, Rob.
Okay. All right. Just kidding. All right. See you in part two.